Welcome to Film Grok. Today's film is going to be Inglourious Basterds, the Quentin Tarantino classic, not the Italian film. My name is Serge Delpierre, and to my right is...
John Ruby.
To my left is...
Tim McMillan.
To my left is...
Curtis Nelson.
Thanks for coming. Anyway, first of all, instructions on how we're going to do this. We have the film queued to just after the Weinstein logo. So cue it up to the frame right after the Weinstein logo fades out, put it on pause, and then when I give the instructions, 3, 2, 1, play, you'll play, we'll play, and then we'll all be in sync. So, Inglourious Basterds, John, what do you think?
I love it, and I also just want to say that might be the first time ever that I'll actually be in sync with other human beings, so that's very nice.
Like a boy band.
Yeah. I really enjoyed the movie a lot, and I come from it from a writing and structure point of view in that it's all about character arc and story arc, and I love what he Quentin does with this, and sometimes he just takes his time, and he doesn't hit the inciting incident at the right time, and other places, but then sometimes it happens sooner, and it's just a great film. So I look forward to letting Quentin demonstrate that it's all about structure, not formula, meaning it's there's a great flexibility in storytelling and still tell a great story that's not only entertaining, but has real value and interest and all that good stuff. So I'm glad to be here.
Thank you. And John, I understand that you have a website.
I sure do. Structurenotformula.com. And come on by and have a beer and we'll have a good time together.
That'd be good. I understand that you'll be possibly posting your notes from this film on that website.
That's right. There'll be like a 3-page PDF. So if people want to go there and download it and they can play along or check it out afterwards, especially if you're a writer, it would be very interesting.
No, that'll be very good. I know you and I have talked about this for a long time, and I've seen your evolution to this, and it's just really, really intriguing seeing how you always seem to hit the spot with these things. So
yeah.
I'll be really interested to watch this movie and see what you've come up with for this.
Very nice.
So, Tim?
Hello there.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm doing fine. You know, John hit a good point. I'm not a Tarantino expert as far as his body of work, full body of work. And what I've seen so far, though, what's definitely resonated with me is the very fact that, yes, you know something's going to happen in a scene.
Yeah.
Yes, you know it's going to be bad.
Yeah.
Yes, you know it's going to be carnage,
yeah,
usually as a result.
Yeah.
But you just, the way he does it, you don't know when.
Yeah. Oh, the tension is, actually, that's one thing I noticed. The tension that he creates is, I think that I felt more tension here than almost any movie I've seen in a long time.
Well, Pulp Fiction blew me away because I saw that film without any lead-up, without a bias whatsoever. Right. I showed up opening day, didn't see a commercial for it at all, anything beforehand. I sat there and I said, I'm usually two steps ahead when I'm watching a film, thanks to a lot of big studio American film that I've seen.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, I'm lost. I don't know where this guy's going. I don't know how we're going to get to where we're supposed to end up. All I know is I am in for a ride.
Yeah.
Yeah, and actually, it's interesting you say that because I think that's the one thing that Quentin Tarantino was really brought to, I mean, filmmaking. If you go back to the 90s when he started, and actually, if you go back even before that, if you watch films like Natural Born Killers and True Romance, that same kind of rhythm where there was suspense and you don't know, you kind of have an idea what's going to happen and it's just drawn out. In True Romance, the scene with Dennis Hopper and Christopher Walken, or in Natural Born Killers, even in the first scene in the cafe. What the hell? I mean, it's just, he has a great way of teasing out the moment all the way to the end. It definitely he plays with it a lot. I mean, it's great to see him still in action here with us in this film.
And I felt just off because I felt for the first time in a long time I wasn't in control. I sort of have a feeling of control when I watch movies because I can outguess some things or I can be ahead of what's happening. I wasn't in control.
Right.
It was coming right at me, and I didn't have any choice of how it was unfolding.
Yeah, and the level of control is also is usually it's like, oh, set up, and then bad thing happens. So my nervous system is used to not having much of a waiting period. You know, it's like, oh, walk in the door, scary person, bad thing, boom. But now it's, oh, walk into the door, a lot of scary people just talking.
and they're talking and talking and talking.
Right. Well, and I know the bad thing's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, what's interesting about that to me, this is Curtis, finally getting my voice in there.
But,
what's really interesting to me behind that is whenever Quentin was first starting out, is all the notes he got on his script when he was trying to pitch True Romance around as his first vehicle as a directing project, that that's what he was told. You can't tell a story in this story arc. You can't do the third act, or the second act first, and the first act in the you know in the second, and all that other stuff. You can't mix and match what normally is the structure that they're used to seeing or reading. Mm-hmm. And he was like, well, "Why not? You could tell. You can write a novel this way. So why can't you do a screenplay like this way?" Mm-hmm. So they tried to tell him not to do that. And so it's kind of interesting that now it has come full circle. And then after Pulp Fiction, it just went huge and. Yeah. Whatever. And if you actually watch True Romance, that's a little experiment you can do, is now all of a sudden, when the second act comes up, you see exactly where the scene is. I can't remember which one it is now, where if you started the movie there, it would actually work.
Right. Right. And actually, the story of True Romance and Natural Born Killers is interesting. Natural Born Killers was the same thing. It was out of order, I mean, so to speak. It wasn't chronological, and I think I read it a long time ago, and actually worked a lot better. And what they did is when Oliver Stone came on, they took it and put it all in chronological order, and same type of thing. And actually, those two films in the original Genesis is that True Romance, was all part of True Romance. Natural Born Killers was the screenplay that Clarence was writing. And eventually, apparently, it got to be such a big part, it just literally, I guess because that's when he was writing with Roger Avery, and that got split apart. And that's what I read, so I'm kind of going with it. But I can kind of see that. Yeah, those two got actually, they got basically reordered into chronological order, and it's kind of a shame because, I mean, they worked fine, but they would have worked really, really awesome that way. And then, of course, Pulp Fiction just said, we're doing what we want because we can, and it worked great. And definitely one of the great films, but we're here about Inglourious Basterds. So, shall we start? Great. Yeah. Okay. Yes. So, for everyone here, I'm going to count down, and at play, we're all going to play. So, 3, 2, 1, play.
Very nice. Ooh, look at the pretty stars.
Wait a minute. Good. Is this the old Universal logo?
I feel like I'm in the 1970s.
That's right, or 60s.
Well, it looks fantastic either way. So,
now, Tim, what's the music here? Do you know this? No, you don't have to hum it with us.
Well, we should definitely let everybody know that Tim
is the
resident.
Green Leaves.
Tim is the resident film score aficionado.
Right.
If for anybody that wants to know, if you ever want to pick up a Jerry Goldsmith score of any kind from any time of his life, whether it be in TV or film, Tim has it.
Nice.
Thank you, gentlemen. Yes, the Universal logo that was the 1997 logo that you may have seen before, the logo that Serge was talking about, was actually scored by Jerry Goldsmith. He did the Universal logo in 1997.
Mm-hmm. Like I said,
but what we're listening to right now is The Green Leaves of Summer, which is Dmytro Tiomkin. He did that for John Wayne's The Alamo. Mm. A big pop hit, and if anyone's familiar with Dmytro Tiomkin's work, no matter what film he did, he always tried to put one pop hit in every movie. Mm. No matter what the subject, no matter what the theme, no matter what the vibe, appropriate or inappropriate, he was going for the big bucks, the royalties with a pop hit. Nice. Hence, Green Leaves of Summer from The Alamo.
Nice.
Oh, wow.
And I want to say something about these. There's about 2 minutes of credits here, so where that may come into play is when we talk about something happening at 15 minutes of the movie, it's not actually 15 minutes. It's actually 13 minutes because you got to take 2 minutes away from the title, from the title being in there.
Sure, sure.
That's right. Rod Taylor's in this.
We'll talk about that more later.
When he shows up.
Yeah.
There we go.
Chapter one.
And I personally like it that he starts his films this way every change in the story. We'll put chapter one, chapter two, things like that.
The breakpoints that he uses.
And tell you the truth, I didn't realize that this was going to have like a fantasy fairy tale ending. Mm-hmm. So what a great way to start Once Upon a Time. Mm.
Well, we also know that he's obviously telling where he's getting his muse from.
Yeah.
Like, I guess you could say Once Upon a Time in the West and everything else. So.
Oh, also, important thing about this is that we're going to assume that you've seen this film and you know how this ends.
Yeah. Okay. But isn't this great? I mean, look at this.
It's just a nice reveal with the sheet. Yeah. She pulls the sheet back. Yeah. Nice entrance.
But I want to ask, what the heck is he chopping? There was like absolutely nothing. Was he trying to get rid of a stump, or is he just chopping for that?
Now let me talk about this a little bit. Now the acting, since I know French, I mean, these are real French actors. The accents are spot on. It's like someone's trying to act in French. Yeah. Mm. It's like absolutely spot on. And it really is refreshing and watching. I mean, his performance is really great in French and in English.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, to me, whenever I'm listening to this, I can hear Ennio Morricone, and that's it right now.
Well,
I mean,
this music is actually
amazing.
In the theme of Morricone, it was lifted from a film called The Big Gun Down, a very famous Lee Van Cleef film. Mm-hmm. And Morricone scored The Big Gun Down. Mm-hmm. And all through the film, you can hear what was lifted from one film to the next. And I know Curtis and I are definitely disappointed that Ennio Morricone wasn't asked to write a full score to this film. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, and to jump in real quick, look at that shot. That is absolutely amazing. And
with the tree stump.
And so many directors, and that's the one thing you get with Quentin Tarantino in this, where you could see he's really deriving a lot of his directing eye from Sergio Leone and the classic Westerns that he grew up on loving. And so, like, all these shots, that cow was placed perfectly right there, and you know they had that, and you know there's some dude standing off to the side with a leash ready to lasso that cow so if he moves out of the way. So the attention to detail actually set up the shots this way and still be a very effective director. Yeah. I love it.
Right. And I want to say real quick, before we go inside, what a great money shot of seeing the whole, you know, French, whatever.
Beautiful location.
And farmland. And it's a setup. Yeah. It's a setup for the last shot of the scene, too.
True. And it's also, we're going to spend so much time indoors for the rest of the movie.
Yes.
What a great way to make the movie feel expansive right at the beginning, and then we're going to be indoors for the rest of the time anyhow.
Yeah.
Right. Serge, come on now. Come
wait,
on.
Wait, wait. What?
Awesome. Well, actually, there's one thing I want to say before we get into all this. Yeah. I mean, because this is great. I mean, once again, we talk about the tension, the suspense. I have to talk about this, and I have to understand. My family does come from France, and they were Jewish and lived through some of this. I mean, obviously not to the extent that it's dramatized here, but definitely lived through the German occupation of France. So the menace that you're feeling here is definitely, it's a dramatization of the kind of thing, but very much was of an everyday thing. Obviously, he's a character who's way outside of how everyone else is behaving. Everyone else is very kind of here. Yeah. And the use, how he uses his power, just watch this, over this whole household and everything. Yeah. I mean, once again, Tarantino's taking and dramatizing what was an actual very deadly condition at that time. And watch what this guy's doing. He's like, he's playing cool, says everyone be cool and everything, which, interestingly enough, is like a Western.
Yeah. And it's nice, too, that you can see the bad guys outside the window, which is... And also, I want real quick notice about dialogue that is not on the nose. He walked right into the youngest daughter and could see the hate in her eyes and said, "The rumors we heard about in the village are true." And that could be taken as, "Oh, you guys are all beautiful daughters," or... "The rumors that I heard are these guys are hiding in the house, and I've just figured out by looking into your eyes that they are here and you hate
me."
I mean, phenomenal.
Well, I mean, and another thing that I think goes underappreciated in so many films today is look at the set design of this whole house and the way it looks. And the director of photography, what was his name? He's Scorsese's
Robert Richardson.
Richardson, yeah.
Absolutely unbelievable. This whole movie is just...
If you look at the window, there's no burn coming through the window,
exactly.
Really. In the last shots, it's perfectly matched the interior lighting.
But look here. He's got the pool of light right on the table, right on the glass of milk.
Yeah. Yeah. It's logical, and yet it's a little heightened theatrically.
Yeah.
I like the mix of both of it. And later on, one guy has a paper in front of him as he's reading from it, and it's acting as his own white card. And it's lighting up his face.
Ooh,
I was like, if I were an actor, I want to be reading in that scene. Yeah. Have that nice glow.
Oh, yes.
Now, Serge, how good is Christoph Waltz's French?
His French is actually quite good, but he does have the touch of that German accent. So it's a bit of the rounded, it's a little bit up. But I mean, clearly he knows. I mean, he speaks English, French, German. German.
So.
Well, as far as I can tell, his German is excellent. And then, of course, they use the device. They've been speaking in this other language. Then he goes to English, which we understand, which the people under the floorboards won't understand.
Yes.
So.
Oh, works beautifully for the audience, English-speaking audience watching, and for the scene
and
itself.
And also for the plot,
so you get two birds with one stone. Yeah.
Right, and then now the scene picks up some more. Before it was a little bit more labored, and now he's getting on with the game.
I will say this is my favorite scene in the film.
I
have to agree with you.
Yeah.
Right off the top of the
bat.
I watched it and I said it's constructed beautifully.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, if I could be the resident pessimist here, whenever I first saw this, And Quentin has done this to me on all of his films he's ever done. The first time watching him through, I get it. I like him. I enjoy him. But there's so much where I'm like, oh, did it have to go on that long?
Yeah.
Really? Is it
I
really?
Agree.
And I even on rewatching, still feel that way about a few of the scenes and even a little bit of this scene.
Yeah.
But I certainly don't know where I would cut it or how I would do it differently. Yeah. So when rewatching this, I'm like, oh, unbelievable.
Yeah.
So, but still, again, it's like, I find myself getting out of touch.
And I can second that.
The tavern scene I felt I would have done.
Yes.
Yeah, that just,
perfect example. Perfect example.
Yeah, but well, this I was cool with because I felt this guy's pain, the guy, the father or the French guy.
Now going back to what I was saying before, I think out of any World War II film, and we'll talk about that in a second, that we've seen it with the Nazis, I have to say for some reason, here for the most part, especially with how this guy is, he's got nailed how it made it feel the most authentic. I can honestly say I don't think I've ever seen, in terms of American-made films, maybe there's other ones I've missed and anyone's free to point them out to me. But this just felt like, basically it feels about as real as possible, even with the stylus with the ink and everything.
Well, actually what I liked about that was it gave him something to do while with all the talking. And it actually is interesting because I've never seen anyone load ink in a pen before.
Sure.
I used to do that when I was a child. I had a pen like that. Yeah. Oh, let me tell you, it's pain.
How old are you, Serge?
I had Legos.
You had Legos. I'm 100 years old.
That's right.
I'm not that old.
My family actually had a phone.
Oh, wow. Well, I mean, if I can go off what you just said about Christoph, one thing, being an actor or trying as hard as I can to be.
No, you are an actor.
The one thing I could say about this is, and it really kind of bugs me with the stereotypical, let's cast this guy in this role in Hollywood nowadays more than ever. Let's just cast it before the movie's even written. What makes Christoph so much more powerful is that nobody knows who the guy is.
Yes, right.
Yeah. Whenever you first saw Silence of the Lambs and Buffalo Bill walks in the room, you're like, that dude is creepy. Now every time I see him, I'm like, that's a dude from Silence of the Lambs. That's Buffalo Bill. Is he still creepy? Yes, but the power you have with nobody knowing you is unbelievable.
But that's the great thing is that and throughout his films, he casts excellently. I mean, this guy is great. Most everyone, we know Brad Pitt.
Sure.
Yeah.
And Brad Pitt does a great job.
Sure.
But everyone else, I'm trying to think of anyone else we've seen before.
Just in smaller
Diane Kruger
roles. Yes.
Is probably the biggest star after that, and then that's about it.
Yeah.
I love this part. He's focusing on the pipe.
Right. And he also shows that his hand's not moving, which is nice that he's not nervous.
Great fingernail makeup.
Yeah.
He's a farmer.
Actually, yes. And look how he holds on it. To draw our attention to it.
Now, I love this scene. There's a great dance going on in this scene, and through many scenes in the film. But the dance in this scene got me the most between these two men.
Well, I think whenever he wrote this film, I see Sergio Leone, because I'm such a huge fan. I mean, you look at The Good, Bad, and the Ugly when Lee Van Cleef first comes in. Mm-hmm. You look at Once Upon a Time in the West, these great entrances these main characters have, and he does it here.
And we move.
And now he's moving the camera because now it's
getting interesting.
In. Now, actually, we keep on talking about the scene, how the scene is great. And this is really, really important. This film hinges on this scene. This shows the menace of that he is and that all the danger and really the menace of the Nazis. Mm. And that's what fuels and powers everything that happens after that, whether it's Alderaan and the Bastards or it's Shoshana with the theater. It fuels everything, and we have to feel the beginning, and that's why he spends the most time with this at the very beginning.
Well, and if I can add one thing, have you noticed how little we've seen of Christoph up until this point? Mm-hmm. We've almost all the stuff has been focused on this gentleman right here.
Right.
And then it's going to switch.
And if you watch directorially what he just did before we just did all this, he moved them from left to right to right to left. Mm-hmm. So now we know who's in charge. And then now, of course, the reveal.
Here's a big shot.
Yeah. Is this Sergio or what?
This is Quentin. This is Quentin Richardson.
And actually, structurally, it's a big thing from Hitchcock.
And that's Shoshana right there.
Yeah, right.
That's Melanie Laurent.
And what's so great is these people have been hiding here all along. Mm-hmm. And we have so much tension without even getting to them. And, of course, that's a beautiful shot. That's all spookiness. But it's actually like 9 to 10 minutes before we actually see them under the thing.
Yes.
And what a great way to ratchet up the tension after we might finally be getting a little bored.
Yeah.
And if I may interject, Hitchcock was asked, what makes suspense? And he says, you have a couple sitting on a bench in a bus station. And la, 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 the scene goes on. All of a sudden, the bench blows up. And the scene's over, and you get a startle and a jump from it. Mm-hmm. Or, say, the people are on top of the bus the bench, and the camera tilts down to show a bomb that the couple doesn't know is there.
Right. Yeah,
and the audience is in on it, and you've got suspense. Right. So now we're in on it from this point, and now we're just starting to cook with suspense.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, I think we suspected before, but now...
Yeah.
Because before, we were afraid that he was going to... Well, I mean, the farmer is in danger, and now he's like, okay. I mean, the subtext of this is, okay, you can play with me. You can live. You cannot play with me. You can all die. I could even kill you if I care, because that is what we do.
Right.
Well, the stakes have been left on the table now. Watch how they're going to focus so much on, or I should say he is going to focus so much on Kristoff now, and the rest of the scene is almost all Kristoff.
Right.
It's just unbelievable. And now that we know the stakes of these people actually are under the table, and or excuse me, the floor, unbelievable.
Right. And pointing out before, once again, Kristoff is now, I mean, Lance is now on the right, having gone through the whole camera move. And, of course, he's got another glass of milk, which plays later with her.
And let me point out with the whole conversation between the hawk and the rat thing, this is what I call the hypothesis statement, which means usually in the first 3 to 5 minutes, they say something like, this is how life is. And it's sort of like a science experiment in high school. They say, this is the hypothesis. Now we're going to do an experiment to find out if it's true or not. Mm. So he says, Germans are hawks, Jewish people are rats. And now the rest of the movie is that statement true or false?
Yes.
And we obviously find out that he's the rat, and Shoshana actually turns out to be a hawk.
Yeah, I would err on us being hawks. Thank you.
Very interesting perspective, you know, through dialogue, what he brings to it.
Yeah.
To say what motivates people to do what they do. But, it's like, I never thought. What's he saying? Yeah.
But what's really interesting is with the hypothesis statement is it comes at 15 minutes within the film, and usually it happens 3 to 5. Even though sometimes it happens later in action films because you got a whole bunch of fighting stuff to establish that. But here, you've just got dialogue to fill that spot, but intention. But obviously, he does it wonderfully.
And so, here's the speech you're talking about right now.
Yeah. Yeah, and then he's a little funny with about it too,
and a beautifully composed shot too. That's very nice.
And also he's gone down lower.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we're closer to the people below the floor.
Yeah.
Maybe we're along with them. You know?
That's right.
You know what I love? I mean, just watching this again, you see Kristoff, and what I like he did with it is he didn't play the mustache twirling bad guy.
No,
even though he is by just being quirky, funny, interesting. And just a caricature of just a creative guy, interesting guy, an intelligent guy.
Well, he's definitely playing the champagne villain right here.
Yeah,
he's got that classy, sophisticated, charming element that he's putting out there right now.
Right. I mean, it's Tarantino giving life to a charismatic villain where normally in a situation there likely would not be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in a real life situation, you know, this is playing out like a Western. We've talked about Leone before. Mm. In real life, it's likely they would have just, you know, pulled him out and searched everything, found that, and basically it would have ended bad for everybody. He is a dramatic creation. Mm. Well, I always like that moth.
Yeah, coming through there. Light.
Awesome. I doubt if Robert Richardson did.
no one dared say cut at that point. So let it roll. So, I mean, in a way, this feeds into, you know, how I see this. And now they just
look at
I love that pipe.
Huge pipe.
And that was the point of having the pipe with the other guy. It set it up. And now, of course, well, I'm going to outdo you with my
Watson.
Pipe.
Is this a fallacy, a one-upmanship here?
That's right.
It's great.
Now all I can do is look at the pipe.
And even now, though, if you go over and you look at, I didn't get his name at the beginning, but the other
actually,
the
here, listen to what he's saying. My man can enter your home and conduct a thorough search.
I mean, it's sort of like a pissing contest. Didn't we have the guy on the right when he lit his pipe?
Yes. But now it was him being patient. It was him being quiet.
And then he pulls out his pipe. He's like, you know.
I got you. But look look at him now. He's nervous. Yeah. He's not just sitting there as cool as he used to be.
And now look, it's that most dreaded shot of mine that I hate, the zoom. But it works.
Oh, but it's slow enough to where, it's not really calling attention to
himself. And it works in the greatest of ways how a zoom should be used to draw you slowly into something.
And this
look at these beautiful guys. Here. I want to point this out. He is doing some beautiful work right here.
Yeah, it is.
Good for
him. And
then
he cries too. Yeah. Oh, he's,
He's on the breaking point. He is on the precipice.
And that's a great look.
Oh, and then
here it is. I mean, he's saying
comes down with a hammer.
Rubber hits the road right here, man.
And the nostrils. That's great.
I mean, I have to say, on Lance's part, realistically, there may be a practical thing. He wants to keep this guy around. He wants to not upset everything.
Sure.
He wants to not upset everything in the village.
Yeah, right.
And he says, give me the Jews, and we can be fine. So in that sense, I mean, I don't know. I wasn't there myself.
Oh, no, I would
so it can't.
That.
I mean,
they just can't go
around killing
everybody.
Well, but this gets back to my point about it before. I mean, what this is, it's a dramatization of something because it opens the door. There's crying. That this is actually, it's a revenge film. Which you don't see a lot of World War II revenge films. This is relatively new. There was actually Daniel Craig did the one Defiance.
Yes.
Which was actually based on real life accounts. And I mean, that goes into the whole thing about how revenge was dealt with, this kind of thing in World War II. The Nazis were not kind about it. I mean, you know, if anything happened to a Nazi, they take 100 villagers and, you know, how many people? I mean, it was very, very brutal. So it is a dramatization. But it's an effective dramatization.
Mm. Watch this transition Christoph does right here.
Yeah, that's great.
Yep.
And the music is great. Do you hear the music starting to come in? It's like...
And what's this from,
The nerves is racking.
I couldn't tell you.
I mean...
I don't know this part.
It's grating. It's not happy or scary music. It's so much tension building...
And that's why he sent the girls out because he knew he was going to have the soldiers come back in.
Mm-hmm. All three of them.
Yep.
Oh, this poor man. I just
you feel
breaks
for him?
My heart. Yeah. It truly does. Yeah.
All I could think of was, he's got to put in a whole new floor now, and then you got to pull out dead people from under your house. That's got to suck. That's just guys.
Now, Tim, did Ennio write any original music for this?
I believe he was commissioned to, and I think he did. But then their
had a huge
partnership fell. You know, it fell out of working together. So I think he started work on it. Yes.
And there she goes running, and that's
a great shot.
A beautiful shot. You have it masked.
Oh yes, absolutely.
It's like a Max Ophuls shot.
What's
if you watch,
just like the Searchers.
Lola Montez, it's like he masked the CinemaScope frame, same thing. Beautiful.
Beginning of The Searchers, when John Wayne comes, goes out.
Exactly.
Is it The Searchers?
So why do you guys think he doesn't shoot?
I don't know. That's what I was going to ask.
Have you ever shot one of those pistols?
Yeah, you can't shoot that distance.
But look, he aims.
She's already out of range.
Yeah, okay. I was thinking that, too. You'd have to have a rifle.
Saying.
But what's great, this is the inciting incident. This is the 10-minute mark, but here in this movie, it's 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's definitely flexing. But yeah.
Well, all I'm telling you is the lead up that they went for the man to crack to point out the Jews beneath his floorboards.
Brilliant.
Made it work. That build up they had up to that point, the payoff for me was so much more emotional.
And fade out. And now it's like, what is it? Oh, it's Inglourious Basterds.
Chapter 2.
This is what the movie's about.
Great. This is what the movie about. And this is exactly what. This usually happens at 15, but this happens at 21.
This is what the movie's about.
Minute.
Oh, that's interesting.
we're killing Nazis. That's what this whole movie's about. Because what happens is when you see a movie or anybody who sees a movie, they can sit and ride with it however long, and then at 15 minutes, they need to know what it's about because there's like, what am I doing here? You can pull me around, and at a certain point, I just need to know what's our goal, what's our focus, where these people are.
And he literally tells us what the goal is.
We're going to kill Nazis. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, to go back to one of my complaints about the film, I certainly wanted to see more of the Bastards.
Oh, I did too.
So
I was
much
totally disappointed.
I was expecting more of a Dirty Dozen to where you really get to know the man.
Yeah.
Even just one or two more scenes would have been. Yeah, I was totally bummed.
I felt shortchanged.
I mean, especially Brad Pitt. Every time he comes in, he has great quips and lines, and you know his character's so great. But then you don't get very much of him.
Yeah.
And it's like, why is that? You know?
Yeah, the theater was too long, and in my.
Yeah.
And then especially whenever you heard before the film came out, at least I read that Quentin Tarantino has always wanted to make his Dirty Dozen or his World War II film. And I'm like, great.
Well, that's what I was expecting. Exactly. We're going to see them in action. And, I mean, the thing is that when we see – the interesting thing is when we see them in action, it's all like the Hugo Stiglitz thing. It's like it's a mini movie in and of itself. It's like, I want to see more of that. And But I think maybe the story is it.
I mean, well, it's really Shoshana's story.
It's Shoshana's story, exactly. Right. That's the thing, and they are serving her story in a way.
But you're right. I totally wanted more of this. I'm totally with you.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to find a logic in there.
I
will process.
Short change for an ensemble film. I thought it would, the ensemble to me just wasn't hit strong enough.
Well, Quentin loves his chicks, and he certainly wrote this in the female voice again.
What I really loved about this guy's smile is
Roth.
Great.
Do you know that's Eli Roth, right?
I do know. I know it now.
Do you know who Eli Roth is?
No, tell me.
Eli Roth is a director. He directed Hostel.
Oh.
He's a director. He's director of basically torture porn.
Nice.
He's very capable of doing it, so it's very interesting that he got... And also the film within the film, whatever, I can't remember what they call it. He directed that.
Well, no, he's good buddies with Quentin. They know each other on the small independent circuit and everything else.
I love this. Look at this. A great move into the camera. Yeah. And of course, we have to comment on notice what's on his neck, suggesting that at some point.
Yeah, he was hung.
He was lynched or hung and he got away. Now this, I have to point this out. This is great. You see him. It's like, what the hell is Hitler doing in that cape? Is this a cartoon?
A bit much, you say?
Exactly. And you're like, I saw this. I'm like, what? I'm watching a cartoon. It's Bugs Bunny. Yeah. And then all you have to do is just wait a little bit, and it's revealed as to what it is. And it's like, that's brilliant.
That is very funny.
What's real interesting?
Wonderful entrance.
Let's talk about how he jumps around in time that we were saying before. We saw them, the Aldo Rain and his men coming together, and then all of a sudden we jump into the future where they've already done attacks and enough to piss off Hitler.
Right.
And so now they were going to go back in time to see the attack and then start keep jumping around.
Well,
so Quentin does that often. He'll jump into the future to give us some energy and then jump backwards.
Well, and to go back to what Hollywood's idea, or I should say the studio system or the executives of the studio system say, well, the audience can't follow. Well, yes, they can. Yeah. I mean, we can easily follow that around, and they think the audience is stupider than they are. Yeah. Not that they're not, but they certainly could pick up
on
those
things. Lost has proven that to me. If they can do three timelines at once, and I can follow it, you know, without them saying, "Oh, 7 years back," or
you're talking about a society of multitaskers now. Yeah, I mean, forget about it;
it's a whole different. Yeah.
Mm. I mean, honestly, I think following there's no problem following the timeline. It all is relatively concurrent,
And get that about Private Boots.
Yes.
Do you know what they're doing? They're doing exposition here.
Sure.
Hitler should know who he is.
Yeah, exactly.
But he's a high enough ranking official that he doesn't know who a private is. That makes sense to us.
Yeah.
But at the same time, Quentin used that arrogance or ignorance to tell us something that he should already know, but, you know, we don't see it as exposition, which it just was.
Yeah.
You know, he's the guy that escaped Aldo Rain.
Well,
and then
you bump it down to the C films who it's, you know, this is exposition.
Yeah. But it's all right.
Nice.
Okay, gross.
That's good makeup.
It is. That's tough.
Oh, and I actually saw where the
that was actually
real forehead ended. The fake began. I thought.
No, that was actually they put entire that head on the breakdowns. They needed somebody with that had been scalped, and they just needed you just the same way they cast somebody that has a lost limb or something. That's all it was.
Nice.
Oh, nice to know.
And here's Ennio.
Yes, here's The Mercenary, a movie with Jack Palance.
Unbelievable score. God dang it.
A great whistler. He was known as one of the best whistlers in the business, this guy.
And he did all the stuff with Ennio, correct?
Yeah. They had a good partnership.
I mean, there is certainly a reason why Quentin uses Ennio Morricone in all of his stuff, because just unbelievable. Let me just I would love to see Quentin Tarantino do a Western. I mean, with his voice of writing and everything, it would be unbelievable.
Now, this is
awesome. Like this slow motion shot.
Don't you actually feel for this guy? I mean, I totally did. All of a sudden, you're just like, you know, at first he's like, oh, a Nazi bad guy. And then all of a sudden he's walking up here and you just know it's his death march.
Serge is like, what? He's a Nazi. I don't feel for him.
He's a bloody Nazi. And he salutes.
Yeah. Also, this is... minute 26, so we're entering the new world, and that is them being terrorists.
A exposition.
That's got correct. The fuck out of Munich. I love.
Right.
But it introduces him.
Yeah.
Oh, my favorite part. Yeah.
You go.
And they all turn.
And this is my own disappointment. That character they just showed the rear of. I forget his name.
Stiglitz.
Stiglitz. But I actually would have loved to have seen so much more of him.
But so he gets. But the thing is, he gets his own little mini movie. Now the person who does the voice is for the narration. Sam Jackson.
Yes.
Okay.
But I mean,
which I thought was an interesting choice. I don't know if I would have chose that because it took me out of the film. Quite
I know,
honestly.
But I think we all have the same reaction. But I think this is intentional. His point is saying, this is what you think the movie should be, but this is not what the movie is. I'm telling you this, you can see all this, so it could lead you up, and then I can tell you what the actual story is.
That's a weird way to kill somebody with a fist in your eye.
The story is about the convergence of his group and Shoshana at the theater. That's what the movie is, and that's what he wanted to focus on. So he had to do this all to get you there.
Well, one thing right here real quick. When they break him out of jail, it's such a lot. They filmed a lot longer scene of them breaking him out. And if you ever watched the first ever trailers that came out for this, they had this huge, seemed a lot more other scenes.
These effects, by the way, are
unbelievable.
I mean, what I love about it is just the way he makes everything visceral. Mm-hmm. Usually it's not, it's just amazing, just between sound effects and special effects.
I would like to see, I can't wait till the DVD comes out, where you're going to actually possibly, sometimes they cheat us, see these other scenes that, to me, I know were filmed, where these, you know, these breakout scenes, unbelievable. Yeah. Like this stuff right here, what a great shot.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, I mean, I agree with you, it could all be that, but... The way I take it is that was his intention.
Sure.
He chose to do it a different way.
Oh, sure, sure.
Yeah. Oh,
that's nice.
That was nice. That was unexpected.
Yes. Yeah. It's great punctuation.
That was an unexpected moment, yeah.
And it's like, all right.
This shot is a bit better with placement, the background and right between the bars.
Yeah, yeah.
No one's face is hidden. I was expecting that in the first shot, but it didn't wind up that way.
Yeah.
Such a great character.
And that's now you know everything you need to know about Hugo Stiglitz.
Yeah.
And this is important because then later in the scene in the bar, we now will feel something for him.
Sure.
And, I mean, when all that goes down, I'm like, fuck, what happened to Hugo?
Yeah. And I like the callback when Christoph looks down. Hugo. You know,
that's right, exactly. There. And so, that was the point, to make us feel for him. So when he goes, even the Austrian, same thing. That's who he was pointed out.
Brad Pitt delivers these lines great. I appreciate the Southern dialogue because my family's from Arkansas and Oklahoma, so I'm like redneck squared.
Does that feel good to you?
It's authentic. Yeah. It's so authentic. I mean, it's over the top for a lot of people. They're like, oh, it's over the top, but believe you me, let me drive you through the panhandle and then the Arkansas border, and you'd be like, okay, never mind.
Well, that's good. I appreciate you saying that because I thought it was over the top.
No,
I was about to say the same thing. Yeah. You think Brad Pitt's on the money?
It's fantastic.
That's great.
Wow, see, it came to me as cartoonish. I mean,
go watch him in California. You want to see a backwards redneck accent. It's great. Well, but that's what these guys do. They hit those O's and A's. I mean, but it does sound false.
Yeah, right.
But what happens in so much of Hollywood when you're watching these films, and it always bumps me in films, is these actors and actresses who get these Southern parts who aren't Southern, all of a sudden they're doing some Southern dialect that from like they're from the South Side of Georgia or something like that. I do declare, you know, and crazy. It's like, that's not a Southern accent. Mm. That's not where it comes from.
Mm. Right. I love the bat just starts right away. Oh, that's the guy. That's right. That's Butts.
I love how that German soldier's playing it. He's playing tough. You know, he's playing, you know.
He's not falling apart.
He's not
showing
it. Which I like that.
He could be internally, but he's not externally.
Yeah.
No mincing of the words.
I mean, he takes it for his country, which is, you know.
Wiener schnitzel.
Yeah.
I would like to know if Brad Pitt added any of his own opinions to the dialogue on that, because it's very, it's even the directness of the Southern mentality.
Okay.
You know what I'm enjoying particularly? The speed of the cuts. We get to linger enough.
Yes.
Yeah. I am not going boom, 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 boom from one setup to the
next. You don't like having half second cuts?
You know? Yeah, Michael Bay had directed Inglourious Basterds.
Look at this. I mean, great. Look at and on the right, you see the guy just lying there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And then, of course, we use the zoom again very slowly.
Is that a zoom or a push?
That was a zoom.
A zoom?
That's a zoom.
Okay.
Yeah. But very slow.
Yeah.
Not so, let's get to from this point to that point. You know.
I also believe it's another cut from The Big Gun Down by Ennio Morricone.
Mm-hmm.
Brad Pitt just weighing it out.
And once again, it definitely brings up the Western vibe to it. And it's a mash of genres is what it is, and it's great. It really works. Oh, do you think it's something else?
This isn't Once Upon a Time in the West, is it? No, this is...
No.
It's interesting that it went complete black, and then it came back to this medium shot or full shot or whatever.
I think if I remember correctly, Adam Sandler at some point in the very, very early talks about it may have been up for this part.
Oh, for the Buried You?
Yeah, I think there were several.
I wouldn't have been able to take it.
Oh, well, I think that's why he didn't do it. There were lots of people who were going to be in this that never made it into it.
For instance?
I like how he doesn't show fear. I really appreciate that.
I think it was a really interesting choice of Eli Roth. Really, really interesting because he does the... Oh, man.
This is the shot. Look at the head right there.
Yeah, that's tough.
Right there.
Man.
That's some squibbage.
And they cut it. They cut it right after it.
And there you have it.
And what is great is...
Ted Williams, I don't think, played for the Red Sox.
Well, I don't think it makes a difference.
I don't think they called him Teddy Ballgame.
Yes. You had mentioned to me, Serge, the symbolism of the baseball bat.
Mm-hmm. Oh, what did I
say? How American can you get?
Right.
Oh, well, that's right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the thing is that...
That's true.
Alive.
I mean, you know, it's baseball. I mean, you know, Mom, I'm going to kill you.
Pie.
I'm going to kill you with a baseball.
What I also appreciate is that usually you don't see good guys reveling in revenge so much. You know what I'm saying?
But
usually
that's what this is. This is a revenge film.
We don't want to kill people. Or we, you know.
And the only thing you could really get anyone to say, oh, it's okay to have revenge for is against the Nazis. Yeah. Okay. Look at that. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 moves.
Right.
Yeah, that's nice.
And we
Six,
go back, I guess, huh?
Seven. Eight.
Nice timing.
Nine.
Yeah.
10. 11. That's brilliant.
Except I don't like when they cut on a move.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I think he didn't. I had no problem with that.
I think he made that decision in the edit room. I did. It should have stayed on his hand and then cut.
Well, if it's such a perfectly timed sequence up till then,
should
have locked. Yeah, and then,
I totally agree with you.
I disagree, guys, but that's okay.
Because I wanted to see.
Yeah, no, I like
on a move.
And hey, Quentin, if you ever listen to this, take notes because we know what the hell we're talking about.
What are they talking about?
I probably don't, but all I know is to me is it takes me out of the film.
Sure.
I think that was part of the point. So it takes you can actually make the leap to this other timeline. Mm-hmm. Getting back to the cape, that's the whole point, is he was getting the painting made of him, and that's why he's all in this. You know, it takes him out of the reality.
Okay.
He's a cartoon of Hitler.
Okay, so now what we're coming up on in structure-wise, we're coming up on how this movie will end scene. It's a metaphor.
Oh.
It's the Act 2 metaphor. And it's going to happen at 37 minutes, which is just about coming up.
Dip and snuff. Most people probably don't even know these sniff and
What? No, but the writers do. If anyone,
No. I'm talking about in the real world. They're like, what's he doing? Coke or something? No, he's like,
what is the second act metaphor?
It's how the movie will end. And it usually happens at scene 45 or minute 45, but this is actually 37.
And
it's how the movie will end. And what it does is my thought is it puts it in the subconscious of people of how it's going to end. So when it does end that way, it's like, oh, yeah, it makes sense.
He's going to give the same speech to Christoph. And
he's going to give him the same mark.
Yes.
And that's exactly
right. I see what you're saying. Okay. All right. The very, very end. Okay. Yeah.
And it's such a
well, yeah, and yeah, it is. Exactly. It's the setup. And we don't see how it's done.
Which
because
is
that's the
nice.
Whole thing. All we see is, right, we see the result.
And if you look at this shot, this is the exact shot at the end, which is not necessarily.
But we don't see it happening.
No.
Of course, it's saved for the end.
Yeah.
Getting back to the baseball bat, I mean, I found it interesting watching this time. It's like, yeah, it is a very American thing. And it's like, it is such a perversion of a very American thing. I mean, here he is. He's got a bat, and he's got blood all over it. But once again, it's okay if it's killing Nazis kind of thing. So. Mm. And now we shift gears.
Yeah. And this is, I mean, in real world structure, this would be like really late to show her new world. I mean, we're talking 30. It's not outrageously late. It's 38 minutes. Usually it's around 30. But now we get to, you know, meet her again. And it's so great that he actually makes sure we know who she is by this little handwriting up here.
But a lot of people probably didn't pick up on who it actually is.
Oh, I didn't.
Until,
I mean, I don't.
Yeah,
I don't,
way in here.
But he wants to make sure.
For any
Shoshana Dreyfuss. Yeah.
For any fledgling filmmakers out there or current filmmakers that do what I'm about to talk about, what I do love, and it sounds hypocritical when I say that some of the shots went along on or the scenes went long for Quentin Tarantino, what I do love is you look at he does classic moves with cameras, takes their time, doesn't rush everything, lets the audience see everything, and it's not trying to fool you through editing and you know, it pulls me out of the movie when I see that, but I love those shots. They're absolutely unbelievable.
But I think that's the case more so in this film because I think
he does a lot of cuts, but he still does a lot of holds in his other stuff as well.
But he's cited – well, that's the thing. I mean, here he's cited definitely 1960s filmmaking and World War II films as being an inspiration. I mean, still think it's very modern film and, I mean, excellently paced and everything. I mean, very elegantly. Yeah, I think in his earlier films, you know, especially Pulp Fiction, I mean, there's some things where he holds – you know, for inordinate what seems to be an inordinate amount of time, but it really, really works well. I mean, because once again, it's the pacing of what he's doing.
Yeah.
Which, once again, he's one of those filmmakers that's kind of taken traditional pacing and basically done his own thing. And I can cite two other people who have done that, and that's Kubrick and Cimino, Michael Cimino.
Yeah. Sure.
Does these very, very long, if you ever watch Deer Hunter or other things, very, very long, long beats. And it's the same thing here with the first scene or even this, how he's playing it out.
But you say pacing, but also it's the tension within it.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
the tension. In other words,
but that's
in other words,
it's
not the scene isn't finished up in two, three pages and then we're done. Yeah. I mean, literally, this is probably going 4 or 5 page scene, maybe.
Well, I mean, certainly some of our modern day films, I don't know how long of a shot I could hold on Megan Fox and Shia LaBeouf doing a scene from Transformers.
Yeah, right.
Whether it's the acting or the actual writing, you're going to be like pulled out of the film. It's like, okay, now I'm bored.
It's a different kind of film.
It is a different kind of a film, but you know, the writing has to hold up for you to be able to do those shots.
And exactly what the writing holds all of that up, exactly.
It's also the wonderful... everyone here, make a blanket statement. Everyone in this movie is like human. I mean, he's a German, but he also wants to hit on this girl, you know. And later on, she blows him off because he's a Nazi. But then she finds out he's a war hero, and she actually perks up her interest.
Yes,
which is human. Do you know what I mean?
She's just curious.
Exactly.
She might not be falling in love with him, but she's like. Why are these people?
But for him to create characters and then have them pull it off without that saying out loud, I mean, that's wonderful. Depth
and that's the trap a lot of, to me anyway, where I find lose interest in films is, well, that's what makes the bad guys interesting. That, I mean, that we actually find something in ourselves, from ourselves in them.
Yeah.
Tim,
you
can talk anytime you want. I mean,
I wasn't cutting you guys off. If you listen to the last 10 minutes.
Right.
Yeah. Actually, Tim, this music, do you know what this is?
No, I don't.
It's definitely a cue from something. Yeah.
That's nice.
And I mean, getting back to what we're talking about, the great thing, what makes him a great writer is he finds original, different ways for, once again, moving action forward and bringing exposition in and explaining this is what's going on and this is where we're moving through the scene.
My favorite thing in a movie is where I feel like a fly on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
To someone else's lives, to someone else's world. And I got to tell you, Quentin Tarantino does that a lot of times in this movie for me, to where with the pace and the flow, and the shot is lasting as I'm talking here. Yeah. The shot goes on and on without a cut. And I love that. It lends to me feeling more like a fly on the wall as something unfurls before me.
Yeah.
And I love that style in film.
I really, she just does a great job. And also the character that he's drawn for her is just, I mean, just so great. She's such, she's so different than most any character we see in American cinema. I mean, that's the great thing. And she's in an American film, essentially. Right.
But, and also what I love is, I love when you got two shots where you can see everybody, and then my eyes can go back and forth depending on who I want to look at, rather than you forcing me to look at a character.
Exactly, and that's
I love that. And then you can see both of them are doing great. I mean, both actors, and
I just love watching actors act.
Yeah.
So longer the take, the more I get to see them do their stuff. I love that.
And now it becomes more of a direct scene of now our interest her angle, his angle.
Yeah. And her interest is actually peaked. That's great.
I love how he pops to the camera.
I know. It's like, he's just.
And we notice we get no subtitles.
Yeah.
Because it's basically her world.
Right.
She doesn't understand. So it's like, okay, fine. All right. All these crazy Germans are around me. And the great thing is that, I mean, you know, having been in France, I mean, I really just appreciate, I mean, this is just all French architecture. It's just great to see.
Mm. I love the books. All over. Just nice touches.
Though I think they shot this in Germany.
Oh.
I think they did.
I love the outside of her theater. That was a beautiful street, that back lot there, wherever they did that.
Yeah, I was wondering if there was some back lot.
You know, that looked like a back lot.
Yeah, it looks like a back lot.
Like good
to
back
me,
lot, but
you know, especially in this time period, you can do that good old romantic stuff, and you can have that.
This is just so strange. He's making this character sympathetic.
Oh yeah,
it's
brilliant. Yeah.
Well,
he's human, and you actually see that in the theater where it actually looks like he gets bummed out seeing himself kill all these people.
Well, that's the thing, but he's making him sympathetic, and ultimately what it turns out is that, he's not. You know.
Well, it's like us all. I mean, it's like how sympathetic are you really to Brad Pitt and his crew?
Yeah, but remember, this is all in the context of the structure of fear. He has the power, she doesn't.
Right.
He's a Nazi. You know All she can do is just be friendly,
right,
and he can just impose himself as much or as not. So basically it's bullshit because he's holding the cards and she's just trying to play them
good point.
As nicely as possible. So all this, all this talk about, it's like Londa. Londa can be nice, he can be a bastard, doesn't make anything. He could choose at one moment to kill you or not.
Right.
That's what the rules of the universe are in this film and were at the time. That's the whole thing.
Those are the rules in my universe. That's the kind of control I affect on women.
Oh, wow.
I take it. No, I'm just kidding. So,
I really don't know how to respond.
Yeah, this guy's trying for a courtship, but they're not on equal ground
whatsoever.
He's trying
for a courtship, but she's giving him the look like, fucker, you're a Nazi. Yeah, what are you thinking?
But she hasn't had that look all the time. Her interest was piqued. The curiosity thing was peaked. Oh, yeah, you're not a normal...
But she's curious at how he seems to think that he can get through when he doesn't get that
She was ready to blow him off. Now she's getting the whole thing again. But
you're missing a really important point. This comes up a little later when you see... I can't remember who's the other German who's there. She's like, basically go away. The point is that when you were around, the point is you did not interact with the Nazis. You were not a collaborator. You did not do anything for them. So you did not go out to them. You didn't even...
Right. She's having German night because she has to. She doesn't want to.
Absolutely.
I totally get that.
Yes.
I totally get that.
The whole thing of that she's... Well, maybe she's warming up to him. There's no way on earth she's warming him up.
I didn't just say definitely warming up, but I like someone who ever said she was genuinely curious.
Her interest was piqued.
She was interested and curious. Like, oh, this is...
Well, then you find out she's... You know, has a boyfriend anyway, and the black man just saw right in front of the
right. It wasn't romantic interest; it was just that she generally was like, "Who is this
guy?" But my point about the curiosity was curious that he would keep on insisting on going and thinking that he actually had it. So, what is this? What is this?
Yeah, I don't know. I wish I would have researched all the music.
And now you see here.
I don't know what this is.
This is someone who doesn't know her.
Yeah. Oh, he's.
Oh, by the way, her last name is Mimieux.
Oh, like Yvette.
Yvette Mimieux. Oui, oui.
You know why I'm most sympathetic for this girl? She runs a movie theater where they show film, not digital.
Yes. And not in 3D.
Oh, yeah.
Where, she won me 3D? Over. She had me at film. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, we've been talking about shots and everything. I just recently read, for all the people that are interested in, you know, these long, steady shots and everything, with 3D now coming to be the big thing in film, mm-hmm. and of course, cinema is going to, I mean, excuse me, the executives, every studio is going to run it into the ground. But one of the reasons I hear that it doesn't work sometimes in films is the quick cuts. It has to have the long establishing cuts.
Yeah, good luck on
and
that
they
one.
Can't do it. Right. In a lot of films. Right.
And now, notice his attitude towards it. He's just like, I don't care about you. Get your ass in the car.
Right.
You know, he's not a sympathetic Nazi.
No,
and I'm like, now, here's the point. Oh, God, this is just so.
Look at that hat.
So offensive.
Yeah, look at that. Putty tat on her head.
It's, you know, it's Goebbels. Okay, that's right. And there is basically his French mistress, a collaborator, who basically, and I mean, you know, after the war, forget it. If she wasn't killed, she'd be killed. And then there he is.
For everybody that think this has been a Quentin Tarantino circle jerk fest, I'm going to halt this right now and be the one lone voice that says this scene bugs the shit out of me.
Do too?
Well, okay, what bugs you about
it? It goes so long, and there's so much that happens that does nothing. It never has anything to follow. It never wraps up at the end. Mm. I mean, we learn a lot about these people. And number two, I'm from Oklahoma. I've got to read this shit for, you know, how long now? Mm. Now, we just need to get to Christoph coming in the room. We need to establish that this guy's an ass, that's his girlfriend and all that other stuff.
No, but
and all
there's,
stuff.
There's a
lot of stuff being set up. You know,
but there's a more important thing. No, but what's set up here is that basically they're setting up the screening, which essentially
course,
is going to have Hitler
course.
Come to it.
Of course. But, you know, I mean, we're doing a lot
that's
of that.
Nice.
And we had to have this shot. Yes, thank you.
Because she knows.
That was a perfect
see, it has
a that was a good angle.
Yeah. A little spice
but,
there for you.
So, to me, this whole scene just bumps me after about mark number 9.
Yeah. Well, I'll
well,
tell you the
we
tavern
could have had more
scene
Aldo time.
The what scene?
The tavern scene does that for me. But
this is the guy in the tavern,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. At first, viewing, I never knew that.
See, that was the
oh, is that the guy in the tavern?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the biggest problem I had with the tavern scene is that this guy was not established.
How small
to the,
is Germany?
Yeah, well, not established to the depth
France,
that Aldo
me.
Or Lando. That, yeah,
that's the guy.
He's the guy
the
at the end. Yeah, yeah.
The guy
the
was
scene.
in the back.
Yes. No,
yeah. The one that comes in and then plays the card game with him. The one that has the King Kong on his forehead.
Yeah. See, that's where I would.
But
have
I didn't pick up that the first time.
Until you said it, I did not get it. For me, I get the scene. He's trying once again. He's sucking up to her. She's like, this guy is so out of his league. Yeah. And she's in the den of the wolves. That's the whole thing.
Oh yeah.
Of course.
She's escaped, and she's. I mean, look. Yeah. There's a wolf. There's a dog.
Nice
right
reveal.
There. And.
Yeah.
How powerless.
Oh,
she
yeah.
is, and she's just got to ride. And of course, what happens in that ultimate moment? That music cue is awesome. By the way, when he walks in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
And just puts his hand on her shoulder. And just, no, I mean, believe you me, the scene is needed. There's no doubt about it. But to me, it's like it's almost like the lunch scene in Grindhouse with the four women talking forever. And I'm like, come on, please. I know they use a lot of curse words and they're very charismatic. I get it. Can we get to the car chase?
Well, for me, this is different because this reveals different levels of the power plays. I mean, you have. Her, she's saving her life. I mean, she's dead anyway, but she's saving her life by being with him, riding that. He's trying to deal with whatever he has to with his superiors. There's all the different levels of power.
Yeah.
You have the guy, the star, this guy who's asymmetrical. It's just like, what the hell?
No, he's great because when he just said duly noted, like he said, let the record be that I have not agreed upon this theater change. As if like anyone's taking notes or like it's going to be reported anyway.
Notice how he just kind of blew it off when he said, duly noted.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's right.
And then everything's revolving around this screen. The interesting thing, once again, if we get to the metaphorical level, it's everything's revolving around the showing of a film.
Sure.
If the film, you know, will let everyone live or die, which is a great, great metaphor.
That's pretty heavy.
Wow.
Yeah.
And but to me, still, once again,
all right,
defend myself.
Okay.
It still bumps me.
I hear you, and I hear what you're saying.
I hear you too. But for me, it's all about
duly
watching
noted.
Her. And
By the way,
duly noted. Yeah.
That being said, it's great writing. Yes, are all the characters interesting, and do they hold your interest? Yes. Yeah. I mean, all of that, yes. It's good, but do we absolutely need it in the film? For me, no.
Well, you see, and the interesting thing is with his character is he's trying to assert his stardom,
right,
and the power that he's accorded, trying to influence it, and within this structure of fear.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Goebbels kind of, he's like, okay, how am I going to reel you in without, you know?
Right.
I mean,
right. Or how is he going to save face? How am I going to agree with you, but still make it seem like my idea or be okay with it, mm-hmm, because you're actually leading me and telling me what to do, but I can't say right. that mm-hmm. because then you have more power than I do. And,
right. Yeah. Exactly. It's like, yeah.
And
okay.
He just so he does it with a joke and
exactly.
a laugh. Exactly.
And it's fine.
And he's
it's
like, okay. Oh, my protege is stepping forward. Okay. Well.
You know what would be interesting is if we all had different opinions as to which scenes went on too long. Mm-hmm. That would show how well written it is, just because it has different levels for different people yeah. who are seeing it.
Yeah.
You know, if we didn't agree that on each scene that we felt was going too long, then yeah. it has something maybe we're not seeing. But I for me, the tavern. Does anyone think that the tavern?
I think the tavern's fine. For me, I think it's the big scene at the end goes on a little too long.
Tim during the tavern.
When they played the second.
And here we go. Yeah, listen to that cue.
Yeah, that was great.
This cue.
Oh, I love that smile.
Awesome.
I love that smile. That is so awesome.
And the music just carries the whole thing. It's like it's music, and it's her heart beating. Yeah, it's like, oh, my God.
And again, I'll say the length of the buildup leads to a great payoff
yeah.
for
yeah.
his entrance there. The length of where we went so far at this table.
And then this is a great cutback, you know, to make sure that we remember who she is.
Yeah, that was
a
bit much for me. It was that, yeah.
But then
well, I understand it was probably needed for a lot of people that...
Now, notice when we got into the scene, he was talking about Americans and slaves, and here he brings it back to her.
Yeah.
And then now the power plays on again. Mimieux.
Mimieux. How do you say it?
Mimieux. Yvette Mimieux. Well, Mimieux. She's not Yvette. I don't even remember her name in this.
You wish she was. We all like Yvette Mimieux.
We all like Yvette Mimieux.
And it's great that it's all focused on her.
It's all on her.
Yeah, because it's her fate.
It's like an E.T., Elliot, you know, you never see the adults.
Mm. Or like Peanuts.
Did you see that shake that she had?
Yeah.
And then his thing with food, milk, and the dessert, mm-hmm. it's just like...
Well, and the milk is obviously great because it makes you think, oh, he does know who she is.
Yes.
Which is phenomenal mm-hmm. use of milk.
One of the best uses of milk I've seen in the
best use of milk in a film. Other than what was it? Suspicion?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Cary Grant walking up the stairs
with a light bulb.
With a light bulb in his milk glass.
That's right.
Gotta love it.
Well, and that being said, all of this stuff I absolutely love. Yeah. Which is all the stuff you guys have been bringing up. And you know, the milk coming in. Yeah. And now, how must she be holding back her rage and fear
and
everything at that point? Yeah. When now, not only that, he calls back the milk and it's like, oh.
But
now
she's in the seat.
But to make this work, we needed that first part of the scene. That's the whole thing. We needed all those pieces to make this work. Now, if we just popped into this and be like,
no,
I think it would lose a lot of its power.
Wow. Well, yeah.
At least for me.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Wow. Yeah.
I've lost my seat in the next.
No. So this is actually the middle part of the movie, which happens usually if it's a two-hour movie within the one-hour mark, and it's where the bad guy's worse than we thought, and that's when he delivers the milk, or he asks for the milk and gets the milk.
Strudel.
Because then we're like, oh, my God, he knows.
And there's cream also on the strudels for extra milk.
Yeah. See, now I feel like we're back at the first scene. We have a table, two people sitting there, and now it's her turn to sit in the hot seat.
Right.
Yeah, very nice.
They're in the same positions as well.
Right.
Wait for the cream.
And it's nice that he really controls her there, too.
Now, is this the midpoint timing-wise, or just in terms of structure?
It's actually 56 minutes, which is pretty darn close to midpoint, because it lasts... how long does this thing last? Well, it lasts 150 minutes, give or take.
Mm-hmm. So it's a little less. Well, it's interesting, I think the latter part kind of stretches.
Well, real quick, I mean, to jump on you guys right here, I mean, look at... The one thing that he does so amazingly, Christoph, in this film is he takes his time in everything he does.
Right.
And that's not necessarily a directing thing. That's an acting thing.
And look at directorially.
Patience.
Just with focusing on the cream, getting back to the milk once again, just reemphasizing the milk also. And yes, and you're right. I mean, this is part of why he won the Academy Award.
Sure.
His command, obviously his command of his craft is incredible.
Well, so, it's also that him acting slowly is actually adding more tension.
Sure.
Which is, I mean, if any other actor in another scene acted slowly, you could be, you know, bored out of your skull. Be like, dude, just put the freaking cream on the fork, you know? Mm-hmm. But here it's like, oh, no. She's going to get it.
It's a very confident performance. Yeah. A confident actor knows silence, stillness, and just, you know, being slow. And
it's like pushing. Inhabit that. It's pushing in. Oh, that's right, because he's testing her.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you noticed, though, that it seems like he tests everybody in this film?
Yeah.
It's just so much a part of him and his job that every person is, it's an interrogation as well as a conversation.
Yeah. I mean, there, for me personally, there's an appreciation for this film because I know French and so I can listen to it and understand it. And it's just a thrill to be able to see good French movie making. I mean, there's not many French films I get to see here because so few come over.
Do you find that it's irritating to have English subtitles when you're listening to French dialogue?
With this, I don't know.
Do you go back and forth between the two, or can you just watch them?
I love hearing it. It's like, I love the sound of it because I can understand it. I mean, I think it helps too. If you don't, then, I mean, the question then would be, guys, you don't know French or German. How do you feel reading the subtitles?
I'm fine with it.
It's okay.
I mean, with subtitles.
It's much easier for me, like, in the second viewing, but once again, that's because I have, like, a sixth grade education, so.
Now, this brings up.
I actually feel like Curtis.
I actually do feel
sometimes like I miss the character's face as much
as
I want.
You do.
Because
that's
I have to read.
Yeah.
And by the time I look up, obviously, he doesn't cut crazy, but every once in a while I look up and then all of a sudden we cut, and I'm like, I sort of feel like I missed. You know, seeing what was going on.
But let's put it this way. I would much rather have a film with that. Or what was the Russian film where you had Jude Law playing the Russian soldier, but he's got a British accent, then you'd have these other actors that were in.
And you're
like, wait, aren't they supposed to be Russian?
Yeah.
Not that they would have some Russian dialect either, but they would be speaking Russian, correct?
Yeah.
So I at least like that. They're speaking their language.
Well, when I'm watching a foreign film, me personally, I'd rather watch a film with subtitles and hear how it was performed in the original language than to hear it dubbed.
Right, because you can hear the emotion and everything else behind
it. This brings up a point as a director, especially in the tavern scene when I watched that for the first time. Quentin Tarantino, if he doesn't speak the language, how does he know he's gotten what he needs out of that scene if he doesn't understand what they're saying and how those words coming out of their mouth?
Well, I would say print. Well, I would think you would trust them to be saying the right words, but I just think as a director it would be an odd dynamic where you don't understand what they're saying. I would just go with the emotion.
Hang on, I love this. Yeah. I love this.
Yeah. Oh, this is great.
She just reacts.
She waits till he's going even.
Oh man,
it's a good break.
That was great.
She breaks one there.
She.
And it was nice how she waited and looked to make sure he was gone, and then.
Well, the thing wasn't just him; it was everybody. She was there with Goebbels and the German. I mean, just any move could have been the end of her life.
And then on top of that,
it's him. Exactly. She traveled the whole distance.
She went the distance in a very hard spot.
So this is the scene 61 scene coming up, which is bad guys worse than we thought. And as soon as we know what the bad guys worse than we thought, it's like, what are we going to do now? And so she walks in and she says, what are we going to do now?
And she tells him,
burn down the theater and kill Nazis, which then directs the movie for the rest of the way.
That
always happens right after the midpoint.
She's had her epiphany.
Yeah.
What
can't get more direct than that.
That's not exactly what he said, but okay.
Is that
well, putain means whore. But it's used in a different way. It doesn't translate, but it's still got the same. Yeah. Still basically saying the same thing. He's like,
and there you go. Now we know where we're going to go for the rest of the movie.
Right.
Fill the theater with Nazis and burn it down.
I'd be really interested to hear what French people think of this film.
Hmm.
French speaking people. Who live in France, what they think, as it compares to French cinema today, I guess.
Look at the backlight on her.
That's nice.
Nice little rim light with her hair.
Mm-hmm.
Here's Sam.
Oh, here we go. This is nice. Here's Sam Jackson again.
Documentary.
I do like that he puts that little button of how combustible, and it's a true fact, and it's so Quentin Tarantino. He's such a film freak.
Yeah. Right. Well, know that this,
exactly. He's saying film, but listen, the metaphor, film is combustible. Yes. Film physically and film as an idea, when done right, is combustible.
And film used as propaganda.
Yeah.
Can be combustible too. If you go into World War II and
The
way film is used to shape national ideals.
Yeah, not only that, but we threw all the Japanese in internment camps.
I will be the blue collar guy, and I just said, I just heard, oh, yes, this shit blows up. Cool.
It burns fast.
What? Later. And it burns fast.
I'm like, well, my thought was, burns fast. Is that.
Have you noticed she looks a lot like the Arquette?
Yes.
One of the Arquette sisters?
Yes.
And
Yes, I totally see that.
I don't.
Go back and watch. Go see any.
Rosanna Arquette when she was younger?
Not Rosanna. Is it Rosanna, the skinnier one? The,
I think so.
Well, the thinner one that was in Pulp Fiction. And
who was Rosanna Arquette was in Pulp Fiction. She had a small part.
Yes, she was in the drug.
She was the pierced one.
But she, to me, looks a lot like Rosanna Arquette.
Oh, yeah. I didn't. See that.
She's got that kind of mousy kind of nose.
Yeah. Oh.
Chapter 4.
Operation Kid. Oh, oh, here
also,
we go. Here we go.
Where we're going to go, so we know where she's going to go.
But now we know what the Allies are going to
do for the rest of the movie.
Which is an interesting thing. So why did he choose to have a double structure? She's going in one direction, and then they're going in the same direction.
You know why, I think? Because it's her burning down the theater.
And
is just not as exciting.
You know who that is?
Because
sitting on the piano bench?
Is that supposed to be Churchill?
Played by?
Rod
Taylor.
Yeah. Oh. This is Rod Taylor, who Quentin Tarantino brought into the film as a tribute of sorts, because one of Taylor's films, Dark of the Sun, which was originally called The Mercenaries, is pretty much what inspired Tarantino to get into the World War II Men on a Mission theme. Mm. And Taylor, I'm a big fan of his work. Mm-hmm. Taylor's two most popular films were The Birds for Alfred Hitchcock and The Time Machine, George Powell's The Time Machine back in 1960. He was a big leading man in the 60s, especially. And it's excellent to see him on screen again.
Cool.
We talked about scenes that went on too long for me. This scene went on too long for me. And it's also, it's a no dissing on anyone's performance, but...
I think I'm with you here. Go ahead. Finish it off. You don't like Shrek with a British accent?
It just pulled me out of the film.
It pulled me out of the film.
He's
perfect,
he's perfectly
so
fine, but it pulled me out of the film.
Yeah.
I'm like,
and he's a decent actor, but
absolutely.
You know what? For me, I'm like, listen, I'm so thinking he's going to be like, Wayne's World, you know. Yeah.
It was like stunt casting.
Yes.
Stunt casting with Rod Taylor, if you think about it. So the scene itself,
believe me, 1% of the country is going to know who Rod Taylor is, whereas everybody's going to know exactly.
Do you guys want to know?
Well, I didn't recognize Rod Taylor. I didn't know. It's Winston Churchill in the corner. Who is that?
Of course.
Then afterwards, in the credits, I'm like, oh, it's Rod Taylor.
I certainly didn't know who it is. But you want to know my ignorance or what? I didn't even know that was Mike Myers the first time.
Yeah.
I swear to God,
really?
I didn't. It was
for me.
Because I got to the end, I'm like, where was Mike Myers? Because I saw it in the credits. And then the second time I saw it, immediately.
Well, here's how pop culture kind of a nerd I am. I have like an eye for actors a lot of times.
Oh,
and
sure.
I'm not
you're
real
actor,
great with
right.
names.
Yeah.
But this guy in the scene with him with the Green Beret on right now, he is Stelios in 300. So during this whole scene, I'm like going, who the fuck is that? And I'm like, I know that guy. How do I know him?
That's great.
And it drove me crazy through the whole movie. And then it wasn't until after the movie, I actually went and looked him up. I'm like, oh, that's why it bugged me. Right.
There we go. Dude. There's Rod Taylor.
Anyone who wants to know more about Taylor's work, there's a really good website.
Go ahead.
The website is rodtaylorsite.com, started by a fan named Diana, who gives a great overview of his work. Taylor's worth discovering or rediscovering if you haven't seen him for a while.
Now, the interesting thing here is on the map on the back, in a way, this tells you this is what's going on. France has been cut in half. That's what happened during World War II. You had France Libre, you had Free France, which wasn't free at all, but and then you had occupied France to the north. And that's how it was split. Mm. In fact, little known fact, my grandfather was captured trying to cross into France Libre. Mm. So I think my uncle may too. It's kind of a confusing story. So, but yeah.
Were they throwing some, were they killed or were they taken back or just thrown in jail? Or?
Well, they went to Auschwitz and died.
Did
so
they? Wow. That's tough.
So you see, strangely enough, I have family history, so this is interesting for me to watch.
Sure,
and this
sure.
gets back to the whole revenge thing.
Yeah.
It's that.
Does it feel good for you? Does the revenge feel good?
It's interesting. I feel it as a movie. I don't feel it in real life.
Right. Sure.
Which is the interesting thing, because I know there's no, getting back to what I said earlier, there's no way this could have really happened. Now, maybe it did and we didn't know. Mm. But really, and I like this, how it's close up, it's on the map. Here's where you're going.
Yeah. Well, I always like those subtle hints to actual things that happened in movies when it's so true, even if you don't know what it is, and then you hear things like that, right. It's like, oh, it's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look,
it's so much attention to detail.
I love this. This is where you're going. And the thing is, I've never seen, once again, in a movie, World War II movie, an accurate map like this, something that looks this realistic. Well, maybe Pan. I don't know. Pan was a great film. But it's all the attention to detail, once again, and with a clear mapping. This is where we're going. This is what we're going to do. But all that being said, this feels like a big, long exposition scene.
It is an exposition.
Yeah, it took me out of the film. And also the set. I don't know if they're meeting in a secret area that hasn't been occupied or something, but talking set design, it's just a very unimaginative room.
It's also just a bummer for me. Is that like, oh, this is where you're going to land? Well, that's the type of stuff I'd love to see. Do you know what I'm saying? This whole movie is one conversation after another, as opposed to almost zero action.
I love how he's the voice of the audience. He's the Bill Paxton in this scene. Right. We don't meet in a fucking basement. You know, it's awesome. And he's like, well, she's not a whatever they said there. And he's like, well.
And this one gets back to the whole thing of how they try and set it up so carefully, and then of course it's messed up and it's in the basement.
Yeah, and then he was right.
And exactly. Yeah. But that's the thing, is you trust Aldo because he is right.
Yes.
Now here we've been set up with Hugo, so we know he is. We know the Austrian. We kind of know this guy, and we've had the setup that he was in the film, and this is going to come back. Now getting back to what I said before about accents, about language, all the language is, the accents are very good, and this whole next scene hinges on an accent. He literally hinges on an accent, and an accent that was heard in a film. Once again, it goes back to the whole thing of film is reality or film is not reality. And in this reality, it's like, you know what? You learned your German from a film. Mm-hmm. You're not real. And it's like, and the whole deal is blown. Hmm. And then it turns into a movie.
Nice levels. I like that.
I love this. I love it. I want you to know you're going to remain calm. The guy's like, what? That's great.
Well, I did read that actor that played Stellaris in 300, don't know his name right offhand. He actually does speak German, and I believe he's German.
Oh, wow.
I might be misspeaking here.
Michael Fassbender.
But he actually knew how to
speak German. As opposed to Lucy Slobender, who I dated in college.
Oh,
there you go.
With a name like that, we need to hear stories after this turns off.
Yoga.
I'm glad you didn't make that up. Brad Pitt is just, for me, he's a genius. He really just, he is.
Well,
the part is not all that big, but he delivers, it's 110%, and it's 150%. Did he have to blow his nose like that there? No, but that's exactly what Aldo would do.
I love the cannon holes in the top of the roof, mortar shots coming through. Right. That's awesome.
And I love this guy. He's laying down. He's just like
the voice of reason again.
Yeah. And it also sets up that they don't trust her. Stonewall Jackson.
You don't got to be Stonewall Jackson.
And here we go.
All right.
Yeah.
Tim,
into the tavern we go.
By the way, I love the scene. I love the cinematography of the scene.
Oh, the
I love
scene
the
is
layout
great.
Of the scene. I love how it ends. I like so much of it.
Yeah.
But it's like,
I agree.
A little too long.
I feel overall,
I should say,
it goes into a self-indulgent territory.
She's great, by the way.
This is Diane Kruger.
She's fabulous.
I agree. She's very
for
good.
You popcorn fanatic. She's from the Jerry Bruckheimer films.
Do tell.
Treasure. Nicolas Cage.
Oh,
National Treasure.
That was her.
She was in those.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Has anyone ever played this game?
No,
but
after this film, I
no, you know what? I've seen it. I've seen it played. Like it. I've seen it played in movies before.
It's actually fun. It's
yeah.
It's
after up until the end, I thought I wanted to play it too.
Oh, you know, it's funny. Just I mean, the stereotypes that they're all playing into. Of course, you know, he's an Indian. Oh, that American. Of course.
I like how the German girl's bigger than the rest of the guys. She's you know, a stereotypical caricature of a German chick, German soldier.
And of course, they are out of place. They have no idea that they had this influence.
And she's fabulous.
That was a great shot that she leaned into.
Like, I agree.
Totally casual. Totally calm.
And it's rack focus. Nice. Look at that.
Yes.
I also noticed as watching as the scene goes on and on, is to be an actor in this scene this. With a card on your forehead for the entire shoot. That must have really gotten old.
They had spirit. They had little wads of spirit gum on the back. I don't know.
That's a camera trick, right? Where they have to split the lens like that to get both actors in focus, him in back and her in front.
Was that a diopter?
Oh, that was a split diopter there? I didn't notice. Heroes used that. Actually, there is a split diopter shot in Pulp Fiction. Beautiful split diopter shot. Yes. You know what
that's right, Curtis, today. Where you have something in the far, just in sharp focus as you have something in the foreground.
Yes.
Right.
And you can usually see a nice little blurry line
you saw
separating
the wall was
Heroes, the TV show Heroes did that during its first season. And then, of course, after the first season, everything fell apart. But they did it really, really well and used it very well.
Nice focus shift again.
There it is, the three drinks.
Three drinks?
Yeah, he's pouring three shots. Because they're going to order three later, and that's his demise.
Oh, that's right. And because he orders it with three fingers as opposed to the one, two, and the thumb.
Yeah. I wonder how true that
is. Next time that you're having drinks with the Germans in Nazi Germany, remember to order one, two, three.
You can learn everything you need to know from the movies, baby. Nah,
I think we're safe now.
Hey, you know what? That's true.
And I really like how she's delivering these lines. She's delivering them as if she's talking about anything, but you know what I mean? As so if someone from the other table is looking at her.
Oh,
she's
you mean facially?
Yeah, facially.
Well, she also seems to be playing up the, you know, I am an actress.
I am an actress. I'm a movie star. Right. I can do this. Yes.
Bigger than life.
I have to point this out, and I hate to do this, but there are definitely some continuity gaffes. She sits at the table, and then there's shots later on in the scene where she's not there, and she's behind the bar. And I'm like...
Okay. Like this? Did we really need this?
Well...
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I mean...
We're going to get everything we need from that group whenever he comes over and has the whole story of his son being born. Yeah. We all know that, and he comes over, and he's a lovable little guy, and he's the one that has the finale. Yeah.
But here it is. This is what sets it up. They're drinking to father.
Do we need her grabbing him and doing the head?
But yet again, he comes over later, and he explains it. It's my child's birthday.
No, I get that. But still, her grabbing the other guy.
Yes, I think it is necessary because it sets it up that he's not the strongest at the table.
Oh.
You're the only one that thinks that today, Serge. I'm just kidding.
But that wasn't even the father. The father wasn't the one with the...
It makes you scared of the big German chick. I mean, what do you want me to say? You know, she's not going to be pushed over lightly. He could have had anyone in there, but there's a big German chick there. Yeah. You're all not going to be scared of me. I mean, it's fine by me. Oh, and here he comes over. It's like, oh, frack.
He plays a good drunk guy. I like him.
I thought he did a very good job.
Yeah.
This is just like FUBAR after FUBAR after FUBAR. Aldo was completely right.
Now, did you notice his last name, Tim?
No.
Wilhelm.
Wilhelm?
Do you know the significance of that in pop culture film?
Movie culture?
No.
The Wilhelm? Do you know what the Wilhelm is?
Oh, the Wilhelm I remember is Hogan's Heroes.
Yeah. Curtis, go ahead.
The Wilhelm. It's the scream bite that you get in all the films. Is that correct?
In the Star Wars films. Like in Raiders, the big scream.
It's that that famous scream that you get in, I can't even, I
look it up on the internet. Look it up, the Wilhelm, and you'll hear it, the Wilhelm.
And it's, I wonder if he'd put that in there on purpose or.
If he didn't, then it was very clever of him. And if he did, it's clever. She's great. Now, once again, he's playing, we're getting back to the suspense thing. He's, exactly. We know what's going to happen. We're just waiting for them.
Telling the guy, get out of there, guys.
To get out there.
Get away from that table. Get away from that table. And he, oh, and then when he spills the drink, he's just.
And it just escalates.
Crossing the line. Yeah. Crossing
it just
the
escalates.
Line.
Exactly.
Crossing that line.
And in that sense, it's like, you know, once again, it's happenstance. It's not scripted out. It's like what you said. I don't know where this is going. Mm-hmm. How this is going to end.
Right.
I had no idea going into this how this is going to
end. We all know it's not going to be good.
We did know how bad it was going to be.
Right. And we're just wondering, how are they going to get there? Yeah, that poor guy on the right.
And so now because of that, it's making him speak up. And because he speaks up, the guy in the back room is going to hear him.
Yeah, sure.
Which is just going to, you know, escalate things.
Hey, all of this I love.
Yeah, it's good because it's the...
I love the fact
the
that
scene
got
was
the
longer and they cut it down.
It's the randomness of life.
Probably did.
How one thing affects the other. Cause and effect. It's nice to see.
And actually, this line moves it along so much faster.
I love
faster.
How his
accent's
he's,
very unusual.
He's so childish in bringing it up. Actually, your accent.
Yeah.
And then Stiglitz is like, I'm...
And he does look drunk.
Here's an interesting acting thing. I mean, Fassbender must have had to actually work on making the accent inaccurate sense to make it specifically
accurate,
that way. And notice the pullback, and then boom, there he is.
And there's the guy from the
right because he pulled back, so you saw the stone right there on each side.
I've noticed throughout this, whenever there's a desk, a table, they love that bright light right on the center of the table.
Right.
Shaft of light coming down to every table.
I like how this guy's drinking out of like a bootleg, a caricature of what a German might be drinking out of, besides just a Stein, this giant glass boot.
And it's interesting that he stops an album that wasn't even playing.
Yeah, I don't recall.
It was.
There was actually music when they came in, yes. And once again, he's like, oh, I have an ear for accents. And you're right. Okay, that is the same guys at the table.
Yeah.
Damn, didn't notice that.
Well, that's because I wish he would
Because
wish
he wasn't set up.
Him, right.
Well, he wasn't set up right. That's the whole thing. He wasn't set up
correctly.
Everyone else has been set up very beautifully, and him a little less.
But what's neat is they got this tough Gestapo
is it the same
guy that. Yeah. They got this tough Gestapo guy who wants to play a card game like a goofball. You know what I'm saying? Which shows, again, everybody's human. We got so many different sides to ourselves. Mm. We can kill people, you know, and consider other human beings animals and just kill them. And then I also just want to play a card game and have fun.
Multidimensional. Surprisingly so, yeah. Keep you off guard. It keeps you off guard. Yeah.
Well, but I think in this particular instance, I think it's a little different. I don't think he's just goofing out.
He's using it to get information.
He's using it to get information.
He's a very smart, smart man. Yeah, you find
here,
out.
Here, yeah. He knows something's up, and he's trying to smoke it out.
How can I get in here?
And this becomes a movie thing.
Okay.
For me, that's it. The other guys playing the game, they're playing the game.
So you don't think he bought all this then?
No, I don't think he bought any of it.
Look at his face.
Yeah, I totally get that he's not buying it now.
And they're, you know, everyone else just wants to kind of get along.
I do like that the private over there stays in character. The one Wilhelm. If you watch him during that scene, he's actually still acting.
they drag him away. Right. And now he wants to join, but of course, because he's Gestapo. Remember,
he
you know,
if, me.
I mean, that's the whole thing. I mean, Gestapo were badasses.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not even okay. I'm by saying that I'm even just. It's not even doing justice as to what they were.
Sure.
Well, yeah, he's exerting his power. He's like, I can join here.
I'm just enjoying how warmly lit this is. Flesh tones. It's luminous. I love that.
And you know, every basement I've ever been in is
lit this way. Well.
Damn, real life.
See,
damn
now notice, the girl is behind the bar now. Yeah. This is kind of where I started picking it up. She's behind the bar, and then when they cut back at some point, when they go to the table, she's back over there.
Oh.
Not
you know,
now.
You know, no, I didn't have a problem with that. I thought she just got up to get a drink. In all honesty,
I didn't really pay attention. Yeah. It was a little. I don't care about those continuity things.
It's
really
a beer.
Don't.
It's a college beer drinking game. You know. Yeah. You know, oh, where's she? Oh, and then.
Oh, the you know exactly. His beer is in his right hand instead of his left hand.
Yes.
Now.
I liked his laugh right there.
Yeah.
She says, "All three are my guests." She brings up the number three.
I liked how Hugo was always sizing him up.
He's Hugo is just generally pissed, which is nice.
Like, this guy just sitting next to me.
He's like not an actor at all.
Can I just shove my hand down his throat like in the other scene?
Exactly. Yeah. He's just disgusted.
And that's a nice scene. The thing is that Hugo, because Hugo has been set up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Hugo's been set up to be like that. So. Yeah. And I see the guy, they were behind the bar.
Yeah. No, all of a sudden
he's
there
on
the bar. Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's okay. Totally obvious.
That was the one time it was obvious. I'm like,
Okay.
All right.
Knowing Quentin, he probably did it on purpose.
Probably.
Why do I picture Rod Taylor saying, all my scenes were cut, and this scene goes on way too long?
I tell you.
Because actually, Rod Taylor had a lot more dialogue.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah, he shot a lot more than what you see.
Hmm. But I did like that he only had one word, or like brief him.
I did like that he was a presence.
It was just...
But the scene was too long. Sorry.
I wanted them to use one of those red lines like they did in Indiana Jones Across the Map. That would have been cool.
Williams soundbite.
I think that would really brought it all home
for
me.
That was really... It made it clear, communicated clearly.
We will start here and travel by plane.
Okay, so they're playing the game. Of course, the game was set up, so now they're going to play the game, and he's...
Here's a look for you.
Irritated.
No. I love the music. And the music is like...
Awesome. All right. Is that an insert or what? Yeah. This conversation in this game is as painful as being whipped.
Yeah. And then when he hits, he even wakes him back up from his nightmare. Ugh.
I mean, I got to say about that, I think it's funny, and I like the cue, but it's like one of those things. I don't want to say did we need it, but it's not in character with everything else that we've had.
Except for when they first introduced Hugo. They did that music and that big
every
title.
Time I heard the electric guitar.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, I'll buy that. Okay, I'll buy that.
That's they don't do it enough if you're going to do it. But
if it were not a couple of times. If it were not a Quentin Tarantino movie, it wouldn't bother you as bad.
Right.
Or it would bother you more.
Right,
exactly.
Say, But I expect that, and I'm totally.
Yeah, good. That's right.
Oh, you're right. If any other film I saw, it would be like, what was that?
Electric guitars? Why are you using electric guitars?
Well, there are certain filmmakers.
Why is he getting whipped?
Graffiti, graphic.
There are certain filmmakers that make up their own rules, but those are their rules. Right. And then all of a sudden you see somebody ape those rules, and you're like, wait a minute, why is he doing that? Oh, they're trying to quit.
Okay, so let me throw this out here. What is the possible significance of having him have King Kong?
Oh, because slavery. He brings up slavery again. Because you were brought to this country in chains, unwillingly. And he actually says slaves.
Which goes back to the scene where Goebbels was talking about slavery. He mentioned slavery at the beginning of the scene and towards the middle of the scene.
So the only thing I can think of is they're saying Americans were very much like Nazis.
And symbolism. So what, Serge, I believe you had mentioned. I mean, what's the building at King Kong?
At one point.
It was the Empire State Building.
Empire State Building.
Right.
Did King Kong have a baseball bat?
No.
Then we would have really completed it.
But it's a very
American
thing.
Right, exactly.
So,
but at one point,
it's showing how they, in his version, saw America as being just as bad, so to speak. Well, I mean, they didn't see themselves as bad.
Or Quentin Tarantino is saying, hey guys, all the Americans who are now watching this movie and judging these Nazis as so bad, we did the same thing with another group of people. We treated them like shit and animals and killed them. And, we sort of have forgotten about that. And Quentin's not letting us forget that.
Either that or he was just really high and he's listening to this and he's like, oh, I can't believe they got all that from that. I just put King Kong because I was ready to go to bed. Because
I thought King Kong would be funny.
That's right.
That's why I was just asking the question.
Yeah. That's art.
I don't know.
People will see into it what they will.
Oh, that's right. And I didn't think about that until you just asked that question.
I don't know. That's what I was throwing it out there because I just thought it kind of interesting.
They brought up slavery twice. You don't do that accidentally.
No, but
that's
my point.
With a writer, you only have so many pages.
But it's three times.
Because
Goebbels brought it up at the beginning of the scene and towards the when he was leaving.
Yeah, right.
And now he's and it's been brought up again.
Right.
And right now, as a viewer of this film, this is the part of the scene where I'm like, thank God he's saying this because I want this scene to be over as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got interested right here.
Yeah.
When
they could have cut out the game for me. All right. They could have. But
totally
the point is, the
that.
Game was in there for a reason.
Sure, sure. Yeah.
Because once again, it's all a game.
Oh, and and the slavery thing. He got to work.
Maybe
in slavery
maybe
again.
Once again, maybe it's an unconscious symbol saying, "Listen, we're the bosses. Everyone else is our slaves. So this is the prison we see. Everything else, there are masters and there are slaves. Because they did see everything like, but they didn't believe it. It wasn't slavery. It was just well."
Yeah.
I'm not going to go into what all the Nazis were about, but
to once again be a hypocrite to my own self. I mean, when I talked earlier about the reason I like Quentin Tarantino's films, when watching them a second, third, and a fourth time, no matter which ones they are because of these scenes because they are entertaining. But the first viewing of them for me, it's tough for me to get through the film because I feel like I know where it's going. I feel that this is where it is. Okay, I've got that, but let's just get it on. Now watching it over and over, I'm like, great, I enjoy it because I enjoy that type
and,
of film.
And here we're coming up. Here comes, and the thing I was going to say, here comes, but because it's always like music. And we love hearing music again. And boom. Okay. Uh-oh.
Yeah,
all right.
You can see him thinking, that's nice. Yeah. But this also...
And we have a few beats here. I love this. Look at all the beats that are happening
here. He's thinking about it. He's smiling.
Nice. That's wonderful.
It is.
I don't know, I mean, what he's thinking, because he's not going to get out of there alive.
That's I forget which one when you guys brought it up earlier. That's why I think that he really didn't know. And he really was being himself and being a part of the game, because that took him back and he's like, wait a minute.
He wanted to play the game. He wanted to show off how good he was.
Yes.
That was the power.
That was his point of,
wait
a minute. I was right to... not trust them to begin with.
I like how Hugo still has the card on his forehead.
Right, look at that. He's got a big Joker grin on his face. And it's not a grin like he's happy. It's just like he's surprised himself. And all of a sudden he sees the ridiculousness of the whole situation. He's like, holy shit, I really did stumble.
You know, Curtis, with what you said, I'll agree with it, that the second or the third time I'm watching this, I can relax now and enjoy it more. Because the first time I'm a little hyper aware of... Yeah. The pacing,
sure,
I may not be comfortable with.
Right.
But once you know what it's all about, you can really enjoy it the second time.
Now, this scene, hang on. I just want to kind of watch this because the scene, it happens very quickly.
Yeah.
But a lot happens.
This is my favorite line that's coming up, though. Hugo says it.
I personally like it.
It's like a Western.
Yep, behind the bar.
Harry says, at least I'm going to be speaking the king's.
Shut up, slut. That's a great line.
No turning back.
Nope.
It's when you use sexuality as an insult.
Yeah, that's right. Well, the gun was kind of no turning back.
And being a Scotch lover, I love his line for Scotch later.
Do you?
I love it. It's awesome.
And then Stiglitz says...
Yeah. No, not that. Yeah. Yeah.
Which refers back to Frederick.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. No. That's nice. Now that registers on him. He's just like, oh, fuck. I'm going to die.
It's a great shot. I love silent acting like that. It's good.
Yeah. Takes him a moment, and then he finally.
That's awesome.
Say Avita Sane to your Nazi balls. That's my favorite line.
I like how he gets up and stabs him after he shoots. Like, it wasn't enough that I just blew his balls out.
Yeah. Right.
If he would have just concentrated so much more on the
and
rest
then,
of
course,
room.
He just came out of the bathroom and shot everybody.
Yeah.
I'm like,
Look at his spine. And you can tell what a wonderfully constructed scene it became because we were all quiet.
Yeah.
We weren't talking. And then the
talking about great offstage acting, flew. Brad Pitt right here is just awesome.
Yep.
And this guy's good too. He's
especially right here. I really felt for this guy when I saw it.
Once again, he's the voice of the audience. Like, how does this guy speak German?
Yeah, exactly.
English? Right. And he just tells you, I do.
I do, exactly.
There you go. Okay, let's go.
Enough said.
They've done that a couple times. It's very nice.
That's big zoom.
That's great. Mm-hmm.
And I absolutely forgive it.
It had great inertia. It was fine.
There's that word.
Oh, well, had good movement.
she's ours.
She's the one that set up this goddamn that's basement
fiasco.
Thing.
That's right. I like that leg of the actor that's up there.
It's like he's speaking to an Indian.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. That's right. I didn't catch that. No gun.
Me no guns, you no gun. No guns, you.
That's right. I didn't realize it was Indian speak. Or at least white person thought of Indian speech.
And these shots are just lingering. I love that.
Yeah. Yep.
But really, it's because it's so well constructed and so well directed, because a lesser director would not be able to hold the moment.
Good point.
And a lesser cinematographer.
Well, good. Yeah, you know.
It's also good acting, too.
Well, but the acting I credit to the actors and the director.
Yeah.
I love also.
The director's got to know what he's doing.
Brad calls him Willie.
Willie.
All right, Willie.
I mean, no doubt. The acting, absolutely. Yeah. Mr. Tarantino, if you're listening, thank you.
And I think this is what bumps me once again, is I wanted so much more of the bastards. And then, or Brad Pitt, I should say, that whenever he comes down in his scene again, he's like... You're dead. Look at Jeff's back in there.
Yeah.
But see, this is split right
That's
here.
That's split after, yeah. And it's right
Using
along the
post.
Pylon. So, yeah. So it works out fine.
Nice depth.
Well, I think us being quiet during these scenes is, I think, the moments that obviously work the best.
Yeah. Or when we shut up to where we're just being thoroughly entertained.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know.
Great.
Well. Oh, after you shot everyone?
Boom, boom,
boom. I don't think so. Thank you.
Yeah.
Everyone's got a gun in a Tarantino movie.
No, he was a Nazi.
And this is good just to show the effects of such violence. Her leg.
Well, yeah.
And, you know, I mean, usually in films, you just gloss over and go to the next scene and there's no repercussions.
Once again, the set design, everything is just so authentic. And just the set deck.
What the fuck happened?
Such a Southern delivery. Right.
I also like how he used his first name there, John. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because we haven't heard his name yet.
Oh!
That's tough. And it's sort of like a tilted screen.
It's a Dutch tilt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now the question is that... Oh, they're just taking care of it in close-up. Is his finger disappearing under her leg in this shot here? Is that a fake leg and her leg goes into the table? Or is that her leg just bloodied up and he's...
I think that's just her leg and he's pushing into it. Okay. That would be my guess.
I hadn't seen this enough to know if either
way, it's convincing and painful.
Well, that's a beautiful picture there.
Well, it's interesting that she brings up the whole thing of tragic coincidence, and that's the point. I mean, once again, they try to plan this, and once again, it is a tragic coincidence. You can't plan, which actually goes back to the whole thing about how they're planning this, and guess what someone else is planning?
Sure, sure, sure.
Okay.
And then she explains.
Right. Now watch what Brad Pitt does. Look what he does. Isn't that great? He tests it out. He looks at the three two ways in his hand.
Huh. I never noticed that.
Yeah. He's like... Okay, so now real quick, script-wise, this is the 75 scene where between 60 and 90, everything goes terrible for the heroes. Things get worse, 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 worse till the end of the act two, which is 90 minutes. Or usually right about there. And except for the scene 75 where there's an opportunity or there's a break either by the universe or by unexpected help. And this is where they come up then with going as Italians. And so then that's the opportunity that they take advantage of.
So in a way, even though we've had less scenes, we're still hitting all of our structure points.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yes. They're all there. Yes.
Another example.
This is the white card scene.
When you have that bright light, just open up a paper and read it.
That's nice.
You'll be a glowing actor.
Thanks.
What other work has this actress done? I'm not familiar with her. Anyone know?
Someone just said treasure.
Excuse me while I check on the internet.
National Treasure.
Besides that?
That's right.
She has done... I can't recall now, but as soon as he says it, I'll remember. But, of course, that wouldn't be me remembering.
National Treasure.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Nice shot. That's not a zoom. That was a practical move.
She played Helen in Troy.
She was in Troy.
She was in Wicker Park.
When you say practical move, would that also be a push?
Dolly in.
Yeah, just physical move rather than the lens. Mm-hmm.
She was in the sequel to National Treasure, Book of Secrets. Oh, here, look at this.
That's nice. It's great lean in. I love that hair.
Yes. And it cuts right to him, right to Hitler.
Anytime you have the sides of the image moving faster and the center is slower, that's because the camera's physically moving. But if everything is moving all at the same speed, that's a zoom.
Right.
Yeah.
Because with a zoom, all you're doing is you're essentially... You're flattening the optics.
Mm.
Yeah, just magnifying the entire image.
Right. Whereas if you're moving the camera through space, it's going to affect the image differently. Actually, everything's going to move at the same time. Tim said, I'm not a big fan of zooms because they were basically overused in 70s 60s. And 80s.
Yeah.
Well, in the 60s, they started using them, but then they were using it for the wrong reasons. And it just became a very cliched move. And then here, they've used it excellently.
Then,
so I'm a bit of a zoom snob.
Speaking of photography, just a quick list of Robert Richardson, the DP. He's mostly worked for Oliver Stone. I thought I was close enough.
And
he did Salvador. He did Platoon, Wall Street, Born on 4th of July. He won an Oscar for JFK. He shot Heaven on Earth, Natural Born Killers, and Nixon. For Scorsese, he did Casino, and he won the Oscar for The Aviator.
Mm-hmm.
And with Tarantino, I think the only other project was Kill Bill 1 and 2.
Yep, he did Kill Bill with him. That's how they got to know each other.
Well, he just did Shutter Island as well, so.
That's right.
Well, yeah, because Scorsese was working with Michael Ballhaus, who isn't really working that much anymore.
Now, real quick, Sarah, you had the comment of why did they do two parallel stories of blowing up the theater?
Yeah.
Because they can't do structure with Shoshana because nobody is giving her a hard time or figuring out that of her plan.
Mm-hmm.
But they have to do this other parallel story so that there's obstacles thrown in their way. There are no obstacles thrown in Shoshana's way. Because if there was, that means somebody would be suspecting that she'd be doing something bad.
Okay. No, I understand that. So then it's interesting. So what we have is we have two parallel stories, really.
Right.
We have Shoshana's and we have the Bastards.
Right.
Why didn't we just do the Bastards? Why do we have Shoshana's on top of it? Other than it's her theater.
Because the premise of the whole movie is Jews are rats and Nazis are hawks. I shouldn't say that's not the premise. The question is, are Jews rats and Nazis hawks? And actually, his whole response to that question is no.
Right.
The Jews are actually the hawks, shown by Shoshana planning the whole thing. And he's a rat because he sells out all his people just to get a house in Nantucket.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I thought B.J. Novak did a great job of standing in the background in that whole scene. Poor guy.
Yeah.
It's okay. He'll get his turn. Stieglitz, man, that crushed me, man.
I like how he was also admiring him, too. He was like, wow, he finally bit it.
Yep. Yeah.
Well.
Oh, God, just the language. It's just like he's talking about the Israelites. You know, the language that he's never used. Jews, Israelites, Negroes. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love this. I mean, it's a fragment, and it's great.
Well,
and it gets back to what you were saying. That's the movie we thought we wanted to see.
Yeah. Right. There was so much. But, you know, I mean, it still works. I mean, you know, but for me, I was like, wow, I'm going to get to see a Dirty Dozen movie. Never mind. I didn't get to see that.
But it's an important point. That's like a fragment from the movie we thought we were going to see. Yeah, yeah. Instead, we're getting another film, which is, it's playing, I guess, with the form.
Which is really, I mean, this is really a Quentin Tarantino movie. He's never done an action movie, right?
Well, I mean, Kill Bill.
Oh, Kill Bill was all action. What are you talking about?
That's true.
Wall to wall.
Well, I mean, up until...
Well, almost. Well,
one of the reasons he did Grindhouse, besides, you know, being buds with Rodriguez, is he wanted to do a chase scene, a car chase scene. Right, so, I mean, he's one of those guys I think eventually will get around to every genre just because he loves every genre so much.
Yeah.
And even bad genres, he'll get around to eventually
because he loves it, which is great.
I'm waiting for the science fiction movie.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Why not?
That's a great suggestion.
He will do it eventually.
That is great.
I think. You know.
I love this. Revenge of the Giant Fang.
Yeah, that's
great. Yeah, this is
now,
intense.
This is the one anachronistic music cue.
Cat people.
It feels like an 80s music video to me.
Yeah.
The way this is shot with the music that accompanies it.
Well, this is from Cat People, correct?
What is? Yeah, this is from Cat. It's David Bowie.
Cool. Yeah,
David Bowie. Yeah, it's Cat People.
I love the shot, and I love all that, but you're right. But it's one of those things that, once again, Quentin Tarantino can kind of get away with. But
he's the homage king.
Look at the flag in the back. I'm looking at the flag.
The flag and the poster in the back is great.
And then there's the flag there.
Yeah.
Her dress to the red in the flag.
They're amazing shots, but I feel like you, Tim,
Right here. But, all these shots are very music video.
Well, no, I mean, for me... Well, it's like she's putting on her war face.
Yes, of course. Sure. Yeah.
It's the Rambo scene where
she's
loading her guns.
Yes, it is.
But here's the point, once again, because he likes strong females.
Sure.
It's like Uma Thurman. I mean, here she is.
Yeah. Now, that's war paint if I ever saw it.
Yeah,
right.
Know.
And what it is, but it's Rouge.
She just rubs it all in.
Exactly.
It's comical. It's sexy. It's. It's also, I mean, for me, it was actually a nice break.
And then, of course, there's the gun.
The grittiness.
You know?
It was sort of like my nervous system got to take a breather for a moment.
I'll take this scene if he could shorten some of the others.
And here's Quentin Tarantino doing the time thing. He's like, okay, let's jump to the night, which is...
Well, no, actually, there was a night in this. We're jumping back.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
We're jumping back.
Right. He goes to the night and then goes back.
Well, it is the night. And then we're going back.
Well, I'm saying jump to, meaning they pass over linear stuff, and they he goes to a certain time and right, and then we're going back.
Yeah, they've obviously already done.
She is awesome.
Yeah, right,
she's awesome.
Yeah.
See, talking about being a collaborator.
Yeah. Right, she's using that threat to get them to.
Well,
to,
yeah. Yeah, exactly, because that's what they did to collaborators. They killed them.
Yeah.
And once again, it's the power of film.
Oh, the good old wet splice.
Ooh, cement splicing.
And once again, this has to be a Tarantino film to pay this much attention to detail for an actual. How do you do this? Mm-hmm. This is how exactly you do it.
So. Directed by a film lover.
Mm-hmm.
Which is cool.
Which is great. Buy it. I'll buy that for
digital?
A dollar.
Mm. No, he didn't. I don't even know if he shot on digital when he worked with Rodriguez on Grindhouse. I think he still shot film.
No, that's film.
Yeah. And to be honest with you, that's the most false film he's done, even though they were doing a 70s genre film and all this other stuff. What I didn't like about that film is the reason he writes good females in this. He gives her a purpose for being as strong as she is. Where in that film, you just see the women talking around a table and talking about you know having blue conversations.
This shot's
and everything.
Great.
It's like, okay.
It just turns around and just follows through the architecture. Yeah. Look at that.
Yeah, that is cool.
Yeah, it's awesome.
And actually, what it does is it helps lay out the architecture for us, which we're going to need to know, which we haven't seen.
Wow, and I thought that was a real location. Damn.
Hmm. Oh, it's a great set. Look at that.
The big scene.
Well, this is the third act.
That's right.
We're here.
I just noticed her moles. She has a mole on her neck. Never mind. And she has the netting. And we go,
and who's that?
Hermann Göring. So let's just scratch it on there. Now, here, this is what got me. I'm watching it. Emil Jannings. And I'm going, wait a minute. Emil Jannings is here? Because I kind of had an idea what might happen. So, and I'm thinking, Emil Jannings can't die. He's an actor. He went on and did films. What's going on here?
Am I the only one that's distracted by the lack of enormous security for this building from the exterior to the interior if we have all these people in attendance that are supposed to be in attendance for this function?
Yeah. I felt cheated that we didn't see
dramatic license,
it
was a bit jarring.
Well, I felt cheated that we didn't see anything on the outside with tanks or something on the outside.
And you would also assume, now talking about my displeasure in not having more of the bastards, wouldn't they have some ultimate break-in kind of a thing or way of getting to that, to where they were to dispose of these guys and stuff?
This
is a great shot.
And this is for me kind of, and there's Lance. This was, for me, bugged me, is that, we have everything's constructed. Mm-hmm. And then basically has these guys playing three fake Italians, and it's just so fake. Now, I understand the whole Italian thing, because obviously there was an homage to the original Inglourious Basterds film, which was directed by, hang on.
It's okay.
Enzo Castellari.
Ah.
Yes.
Enzo.
And, also, Enzo has a cameo in this scene. Mm-hmm. He is in this scene.
Oh,
so, obviously,
really?
There's a tribute to him. Mm. So, in that sense, I understand. But then the fakiness of the Italian, for me, I don't get it. I know it's kind of funny because Brad Pitt does it. I just don't get it in the context of everything else being shown.
What do you mean? You don't get that that's the best story they could come up with, even though that... This is the best story they could come up with, even though that it's lame.
No, it's lame, but then it's lame in how it's played.
It's exaggerated for comedic effect, but to such a degree that
That I find it distracting.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, it's too. Also I figured he was just asking them to repeat it because he was confirming that they're not really Italian.
No, he's asking to confirm because he knows it's context of this thing. Yeah. He knows it's full of shit. But it's just like.
Well, but, Brad Pitt does say it in the scene before this. He's like, whoa, what the fuck else are we going to do?
Go home. Right,
yeah,
exactly.
It's like, I'm going to push forward, and we're going to get this done no matter what. So It didn't bump me as much, but I can understand what you're saying. But I thought it was great because of...
Yeah, and if you look at her face, she knows what's going on. She's just like, oh, these guys are butchering Italian. And
I think my feeling is I think I would have liked something a little more elegant, considering everything else that's come before it. I got it. I know what you guys are saying.
Jarring.
And I like, he's like, oh, my God, I'm just standing here. What the hell is going on? Let's get this on. But I'm like, now it feels like it's a slightly different movie.
To me, it looks like he's trying to do a Clark Gable... Brad Pitt, but a Harvey Korman version of Clark Gable from the Carol Burnett sketch of Gone with the Wind.
You probably nailed it exactly. Quinn and Brad probably had that exact conversation on set.
You think you're Clark Gable. That's how you're going to act as.
He just looks very uncomfortable to me.
He looks like he hasn't had a movement for quite a while.
Well, here he is. He's trapped.
But then it kind of floats on. It's kind of a half and a half thinking, oh, God, I just want to get this on. It's like, all right, I'm just not going to say anything. And
he was like, my plan would work perfectly if we had to speak zero Italian.
Yeah, I think you're right. Basically, his direction was that Aldo thinks he's acting like Clark Gable. That's how Aldo is working it, because Aldo doesn't know what to do.
Buongiorno.
What's great is he says this Italian very, very fast on purpose to see if he gets it and understands it. And then the best Brad Pitt can do is say... Isn't that great?
And then, of course, it says thank you.
Yeah, that's right.
And
right.
What I thought was hilarious about it, the one that supposedly spoke the least amount of Italian, which was zero, seems the most calm and comfortable here. Right, and the two of them are shitting their pants, and he's like, okay. Maybe he just doesn't know the breadth of the situation. Yeah. He's like,
maybe he doesn't know German.
The interesting
either.
Thing that we don't know is that Lanz has his own plan.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Otherwise, they would have all been gone, and that's and maybe that's.
Right. Well, he already walked in knowing that it's her shoe. He's not trying to figure anything.
But it's the bigger plan because he knows what their plan is, and he knows that he's going to take advantage of it.
He's a cat toying with a mouse right now.
But he's setting himself up. That's the whole thing. He's setting things up so that he can actually affect his plan.
Well, he wants to know if he can
benefit
from
this. Oh, you're
talking
about the secondary plan, yes.
Well, because that's the thing, is this is all about his secondary plan.
Right.
And he's playing with them so he can make sure his secondary plan, because, in other words, those guys can go in, they can go blow themselves up, but he's going to get Aldo, and he's going to get his deal.
He doesn't know about the dynamite yet until he steals dynamite from this guy's leg. I mean, but he understands, right, they're obviously there to kill everybody, but he doesn't know how, and he doesn't know... Right, if he can really still benefit
but
from
it.
But
he is right. He lets the two of them go in to initiate what they're going to do.
Right.
But yet he needs Brad Pitt as a device.
Well, he also doesn't even know what they're planning on doing.
Well, if they're going to blow it off. No,
sure.
Now, the one thing, he doesn't know what they're blowing up, but he knows that they're there basically...
To kill Hitler. Yeah.
To kill Hitler.
Right.
And he's all for killing Hitler because he says he can kill Hitler and end the war right now, and that means I want my place in Nantucket or whatever.
Yes, mm-hmm.
He doesn't know that it's a bomb. It could be anything. It could be a grenade. It could be a gun. He doesn't care. The fact that it is... It is going to be a bomb. Just makes it even that much better. You can control it that much. These guys are great.
I love this, how they can show that they're actually nervous and everything.
And that's Bormann. Yeah. And it's like, so Goering and Bormann are there and Goebbels? At this point, you have to understand, when I saw this originally in movie theater, I'm going like, okay, this is really interesting.
Yeah.
How's this going to pan out? And then, of course, here they're doing the fake Italian.
Yeah. What's that name? Is that like another actress or something?
French actress.
Okay.
I like the interplay between these two. Mm-hmm. I wish I had seen more of their back history in some respect.
A little exposition.
Mm-hmm.
But
yes.
It's all right.
It's definitely needed for the ending to work.
And when you're going to end your life, it's okay to go over things one more time.
The night these two have planned.
Yeah. But it is definitely needed.
Well, they certainly expected to live, that's for sure.
I don't know if they did.
I don't know about that either.
I don't think she was going to plan on, I don't think she was planning on leaving the theater.
I get it as being very martyred on their
part. They're going to take everybody out and they're going to die. I thought that's why they were, that's why they cried when they say goodbye here.
Right,
because it was like this is the last time. Yeah, that's very fun.
That's like Batman TV show.
Yeah, I mean, I think with the silver nitrate, they're like, you know, it goes. Everything's going.
Yeah.
And see
because the
yeah, when he says goodbye to her in
the
projectionist room.
Didn't run out of there. He didn't like flick his cigarette and then run. Even though I don't know how do you stay in a burning building? That would just take nerves of steel.
Wow. I mean, you're killing a bunch of Nazis once again.
I know, but how do you stay in there?
I
would still try and get out.
I don't know. I've thank God I've never been in that situation. Right. Now let's talk about the scene coming up.
Well, you haven't thoroughly researched the film then. I need to tell us what
Well, in a way it's not even funny. But
yeah.
It's not. Seriously. But actually let me talk about this scene briefly. I read an article online Tarantino did an interview with someone, and basically the way they rehearsed this is that in the close-ups with her when she's going through her death scene, it's actually his hands, because he rehearsed with her on top, so for the close-up was his hands. So when it came to shooting, it was just his hands and not Christoph Waltz's hands, apparently.
Oh,
it was Quentin's hands.
Yeah.
Quentin Tarantino's hands.
I would see where that would put the fear of God in her.
Well, no, that wasn't to put the fear of God, but that was...
He's being funny.
That was actually to give her the assurance that this is the way we're going to be doing this, and that, I mean, so she knew that it was all under control.
Sure.
Yeah. Anyway, that's the story that was told. I was like, that's very interesting.
Well,
I wouldn't expect that. Oh, there's the feet thing again.
And you know what?
Cinderella story.
No, it's a Tarantino thing. Tarantino's got a thing about feet. Remember Pulp Fiction? Uma Thurman's feet?
And the whole conversation about giving a woman a foot massage.
Oh, there's a whole foot thing in Pulp Fiction. Oh, yes.
And I've seen Uma's feet, and if there was one foot that I wasn't attracted to, it's probably Uma's.
Oh, really?
Well, I...
Oh.
She looked like she could climb trees of those things.
Well,
easy there, Tom.
Now.
This is like a Cinderella story gone bad.
Yes, yes. Oh, glass slipper.
Please don't let me fit the shoe. Please don't let me fit the
and
shoe.
And she knows right there. She's like,
nice little Dutch tilt. Is that what you call it?
Awesome. Yeah, it's called Dutch tilt.
I will say
this is the second
Dutch
time.
Angle,
because.
Right?
Yeah, Dutch tilt. Dutch tilt, Dutch angle? I think it was Dutch tilt.
I was very surprised.
Because it started in the Netherlands, you know, when they one day by accident... Never mind.
I was ready to hear it.
It's I don't know what it's called. It's called Dutch tilt. It's just we learned in
I don't know school. Why, but maybe it was very, very smart on Quentin's part, but I was surprised by his reaction of just lunging at her and choking her to death right
now. I was going to say the same thing.
Yeah.
That totally took me by surprise. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I was absolutely...
It doesn't bother me, but I was like, "Oh wow!"
Well, yeah. Once
he's joking her to death.
Right.
Well, once again, he breaks expectations completely.
Yeah. What else? Yeah.
There must be some backstory where he was like, he had a horrible aunt or something like that, and he could have let her go, right? But he has to choke.
Well,
her
you see, well, I thought he was going to shoot her. And to do this is such a brutal...
Animalistic.
It's such a brutal thing. And remember, we have not... Oh, well, I guess... Yeah, that's Tarantino's hands.
Well, I don't know. Did Tarantino have a green jacket on then?
Dude, he puts... Okay, John, he puts the jacket on and they do the shot.
Yeah.
It really can work.
Yeah, but if you're saying if they did it...
What?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's fine. It could have been that way. It sounded like they did it in rehearsal.
No, it was the way they shot it. They rehearsed it that way, and they shot it that way. He had the jacket
on.
No. It's movie magic.
Well, no.
This I like.
I like how you just... That's
great.
Yeah, I know. That's good.
That's great.
I mean, it's horrible, and it's funny.
Yeah, no.
And, of course, they take, you know, the knife, the gun, the dynamite.
The mission is in jeopardy.
Or is
well,
it?
Well, this is right.
And we don't know. We think he's toast. That's it. And I like how the carnations look behind.
Well, this is actually the darkest moment, which is...
We think it's the darkest moment, absolutely.
Right, which is usually at 90, which is the end of Act 2. Which is... And this is actually at...
And so he goes...
82 minutes.
Sorry, yeah.
1 hour 22.
And so, of course, what we find out later is that at that moment, he put the dynamite under the seat.
So, John, with this structure you're talking about, percentile-wise, how much film would you say falls into this?
They always have the structure scenes, because it's just basically how you tell a story. That's why you have a beginning, middle, and end. Mm-hmm. And then that just breaks down into certain things. Mm-hmm. But it goes even more than that. Most of the time in films, it even gets closer to almost the exact minute mark. Like the inciting incident is at 10 minutes. And it just happens.
That was awesome.
So it's just a machine.
Well, it's a machine to a certain point. I mean, romantic comedies and kids' films are 90 minutes. Action films are 2 hours. So that's a whole extra 30 minutes. So you get things different because you have an extra 15 minutes of fighting. You know what I mean? And that throws everything off. But the same steps are there. And usually, even in Juno, when it goes off a little bit, the next one somehow catches up. Just to keep the structure and the story. It's phenomenal. It's really, and it's not me. It's Sid Field, Vicky King, and other people talking about structure. But I've just pulled stuff from everyone and put it into place, and then really make it really clear and describe it in a way that people can see it. Because somehow people are willing to talk about dialogue, but is without the structure in the right place.
You know what's interesting? What we just saw, we've probably just seen the most continuous action.
Yeah.
Practically in like a long time in this film,
without
because
they've
gone from scene, but they were taken from one spot. You saw them in the truck arrives, they're brought in, and here they are.
Yeah.
We have our big light on the table.
And he's got his bottle of Chianti.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't like Chianti.
Nope.
No, I don't. My parents used to drink that when I was younger. I tasted some. Just drink it all the time. Good for them. I didn't like it.
So then this is right after 90, where it's the darkest moment. What basically his darkest moment is, Eldo the Apache has been trying to do something, which is kill Nazis. But the way he's trying to do it is not going to work. And this is the end of the second act. He's not going to be able to do it with his band of people. So he has to do something different. And the something different is work with the Nazi and guarantee his freedom.
Now, actually, in terms of this, feels more like we're in the third act, not like we're at
this
the end
is
of
it.
The second
this
act.
This is it. Well, end of second act, beginning of third act.
So this is third act now?
Yes.
That's so odd. So essentially the third act plays out without him.
Without who?
Well, the third act is all shortened now as to how we usually...
Well, no. Yeah. Well, the theater burning down takes up so much time. It's just because it's an action revenge sequence, and that's what we want to see. But it doesn't have to be that long, but it's a Quentin Tarantino film, and we want to see Hitler get shot in the head, so...
Curtis, how are you with how this plays out from this point to the end?
I love it.
This is the film you felt you wanted to see?
All this stuff I enjoy a lot. But once again, you know, just out of curiosity, of not even knowing the filmmakers that were in there or the actors that were in the theater, mm-hmm. I'm like, wait a minute. So is he saying that, what did it, all these rumors that Hitler had a double and everything, is that true? And
When I saw it, I was just like, wait a minute, like, huh?
He's killing us?
I mean, what? What's going on?
I think basically Quentin's saying, it's my film, I'll do whatever the hell I want. Well, and that's what we wish. We wish we could have killed Hitler, and that's the way I see it. But so it doesn't bother me too much. But it's okay.
But what it's doing is actually, as you were saying, John, it's fulfilling the premise of the film, whether that the Jew is the hawk or the rat.
Right, right.
And here he's saying he's following through that, you know, the Jew is the hawk.
Yep, and he's
on that,
the
he's
rat
following on that, he's on selling, that premise. He's flipped it out. He's flipped it around here.
Yeah, he's willing to sell out everybody he's working for.
Yeah.
So basically, in a way, Hitler, and this is kind of how I feel, because it feels like, yes, Hitler got killed, but it feels so incidental to me. That's the thing. It really feels... I feel so little other than like, huh, but I think you're right. Thematically, is how it pays off. It has less to do with Hitler and more to do with these guys. Hitler's just a guy, strangely enough, even though it contradicts history, and it takes such a big part of our bandwidth in terms of history.
But you feel so that it's no big deal that, I mean, you don't feel satisfied that he was
confused.
Killed? Or?
I'm confused, okay. And I don't know why I'm confused. I'm like...
That you're not satisfied that he got shot?
Yeah, I'm like...
Well, I mean, on a spiritual point of view, revenge doesn't work because we're all bright, shiny balls of light inside of human beings, and the only thing that really works for us is to be connected and loving. So if we attempt to try and do revenge, it's not satisfying because it's not connecting us with who we really are.
Well, maybe my deeper feeling is that, I mean, since this is what it's leading to, he's trying to do his deal and, you know, let essentially Hitler get killed, and the kind of point we're discussing now is that Hitler getting killed is like, did everything hinge on Hitler being killed that would end the war? And my gut feeling is like, no. I mean, yes, Hitler was in charge and everything, but it just feels, I don't know why, I can't explain. It just feels like it was more than that. It was this big, huge thing of which Hitler was part of and led, and definitely led completely and fiercely and deathily. But I'm like, but there is a cognitive dissonance going on, and it's hard to explain. And this is like, what?
Now, and also, this is the darkest moment for Aldo now, because he doesn't make deals with Nazis. So it's not just darkest moment that he might die, which has now disappeared in a way, but the darkest moment is, my God, I've got to let a really bad Nazi guy go. And not only that, but I have to help him, you know, live a whole nother life.
It's a great reaction, though, by him. Yeah, though. He's supposed to be this horribly bad guy.
Himself. Yeah, and he's like,
I can't believe the card I just played. Look at that hand.
Now, is he gay?
You're talking about his character?
Yeah.
I don't know.
That was just a bit flamboyant.
He's just excited that he's going to save his sorry ass. By then... By 1944, June 1944, I mean, D-Day was coming, but the Germans, I mean, it was not necessarily going great.
Right. They knew they were going to...
Well, they didn't. No one knew anything, but still. But the interesting thing that's coming across is, like, it's almost like the plot doesn't make a difference to these guys. It's how do they fulfill themselves in terms of their own missions and thematically, and everything else is like, who cares? For this film, Hitler needs to die. Okay. That does what we needed to do. You know what I mean? It just happens to be set during Nazi Germany.
No, I don't understand what you're saying.
Does that make sense? Because it seems like the characters and how they're fulfilling their imperatives. And thematically...
He missed the saying. It was supposed to be 99.99% out of 100, but he said out of a million.
Oh. Yeah.
But go ahead. So you're saying the characters...
The characters fulfilling their... What they need to do is more important than historical accuracy.
Oh, yeah. Well.
That's what I was saying. It's almost incidental that it takes place during Nazi Germany.
Yeah, it's just a fantasy that what if we could have killed Hitler? What would have
happened? Basically,
well, what would have happened? And wouldn't that have been nice?
And it's the characters. What's important to the characters. So this film within the film was directed by Eli Roth.
Which I watched a little of it. Did you watch it on the DVD? They actually include it.
Oh yeah,
on the DVD, and actually, there's some funny parts. There's an American commander goes, the French or the Americans or whatever are running around, and you see two die, then three die, and you cut back, and there's a pile of human bodies there, and the commander's on the line going, they just killed 47 of our men, and one guy comes running by and gets shot and falls over and goes 48.
I don't know.
So I only watched like.
You see
here's the Jew, and he sees Hitler. And what does Hitler do? He asks for gum.
That's fantastic. Like, you got to love that.
I want gum. And I like this.
Now he's excited. Like he comes in there, like, little kid.
Come on. What? Come on. I'm watching the movie.
Yeah. He goes, what do you want me to do?
Come on. Okay.
Now, were these guys going to be martyrs, too? Because you don't see him taking the dynamite off and planting it anywhere.
Well, that's what's unclear. Were they going to
take it off their leg when they're
shooting
everybody?
Yeah, is this a suicide mission?
Yeah.
To me, it seems like this is a suicide mission.
See, that's what's unclear. They're not behaving like it's a suicide mission. But then again,
because when they were shooting everyone from the thing, and I all of a sudden I was like, oh man, that dynamite's still strapped to their leg.
Exactly.
What
yeah,
the
same way.
Well, yeah. Again, then you see it.
Nice move.
Nice move. Very nice move. Nice rim light.
When you got a blonde, it works the best.
I do like the score on this right here. Just the music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, was a bongo drum.
See,
or
now look at that kiss goodbye.
Now,
the interesting thing
she
about
knows they're not living.
Well, no. I don't know. The interesting thing about projection rooms, you know, is that if I remember my projection rooms correctly, they do seal off in case a fire starts inside to seal it off from the building.
Good.
So maybe part of the idea was that she'd seal it off and they would all burn and somehow she'd get out and survive, but they don't know if they're going to survive. I don't know. I'm throwing it out there.
I think it's just funny the guy's walking around with these two big crowbars.
I thought it was funny that the swastika he was cutting into the wood was absolutely perfect, like a router had cut it out. But he shimmied,
that was pretty exact.
He dug it in there. I love it. It just some little cheese factor in there.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Absolutely perfect.
Ah, threading film. Nice crowbar.
Yeah.
You know that always holds, by the way. You shake that door and shake that door, and it won't fall out.
Never.
This is great music.
Sounds like, what's the beginning of Night on Bald Mountain in Fantasia? Mm-hmm. Is that classical piece?
Nah.
Sounds a little bit. To me.
Actually, I think this is from Tarantula or something.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just kidding. I have Tarantula. No idea. I'm just joking.
Arachnid.
This music doesn't sound familiar, Tim?
No.
Okay.
Other than what I said, Bald Mountain to me, but it just felt like that.
Okay, that's a lot of silver nitrate.
That's a lot.
And I like how it just cuts out.
Yeah. Hey,
look at this. Now I'm watching this, I'm going like, there's no way they're giving this guy a deal. No way. And I was wrong.
Yeah. I love that he's so proud that he actually did it. He's like,
yeah, it's like, I did it. It's all my plan.
That's brilliant. That's just brilliant.
We just showed you the flashback, and it's true.
Yeah. And it's true, by the way.
This is the guy who's having fun with his role.
Yeah.
You can just...
Yeah.
Well, there's certainly room in the writing to have fun. That's the good thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like, you know, he was... I've seen some films with some...
Isn't that nice
actors.
That he gave everybody a Congressional Medal of Honor, too?
Hey, you know what? Actually, I'm a decent guy.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, give the guys a medal.
That's it. Well, that was the big argument, wasn't that? A lot of Nazis and also probably anybody in war, I do what I was told to do. You know, I'm really not that bad of a guy.
Well,
it
depended on what they were. A lot of the scientists they took and basically, and they were harbored. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. He's almost offended he's handed him this thing and I got to have this conversation. All right.
But look at the
light
on his white
suit. Recognize the voice?
It's blonde. What voice is that?
Harvey Keitel.
That's Harvey Keitel.
Oh, you're right. It is.
Sweet.
I can hear it.
All right.
That's nice.
Little Harvey in there.
And all he's thinking is,
this the wolf? They sent the wolf?
That's right.
That's all you had to say.
I got to bring him to the wolf.
This film they're watching is pretty gory and extreme for that time period.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing. I mean, this is all very cartoon.
Yeah.
I mean, just in terms of treating the Nazis and treating arrows. I mean, but I think it's interesting how they treat him. It's like, here he was, he did this thing, then he shot the film, and now he's watching himself doing all these horrible things, and he's like, I feel like shit.
Yeah.
This is awful of what I did.
Yeah.
This is absolutely, I'm like, this isn't me.
Right.
I want to have to keep on living this.
Right. And I totally dug that. There's a whole other dimension to
it. And it's a French
film.
Director that's so proud of his work. which most French directors are kind of, you know, like, you know, I am an artiste. And he's more of like, you know, they get this schlocky little horrible film and he's enjoying it so much. I'm so good.
So now here he showed the burn marks and that's the changeover. Yeah. And
we're getting close
to the other reel and it's going to get to the cut in.
The only thing I didn't like about the timing was that I thought he locked the doors a lot earlier than he could have. Do you know what I mean? Like, what if someone would have needed to leave?
Sure.
I mean, they literally in actual
You're running
time,
a big risk.
That
yeah.
was like 10 minutes ago.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. Gotta take a leak.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's true. And then, of course, now once again, this goes back to the bar and everything else. And what happens in the middle of the perfect plan?
Oh, yeah.
What the fuck?
Foo bar, man.
Someone earlier I said... French filmmaker.
Look at those moles.
Actually a German
Dude,
filmmaker,
look at that.
So I apologize. Yeah. Audience listening.
Wow. She's pretty.
She's still beautiful.
She's totally pretty. It's like, hi. And she's like.
He did that very well.
I think this guy is Mike Myers' little brother, though, or his son or something. He looks exactly like Myers to me.
And it's great how he changes. From trying to woo her to then demanding attention.
Well, it just shows that, you know, the wooing is all an act and just a play of the power because really he's...
You know, I still don't buy that. I still buy that he would like to woo her, but it didn't work, and then he gets pissed off, and then he defaults to, hey, wait a second, I can demand this,
yeah.
You know? Because then when she says, go ahead and shut the door, I think he's actually caught off guard.
Yeah,
he's like,
it?
You mean what? You know what I mean? Like... Oh.
It worked?
Yeah,
hey,
you're right, right.
I got this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's one thing you can say about this film. I mean, just watching it from start to finish right here again is just the cinematography.
I'm not a man.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
Are but unbelievable.
Yeah. See, here he says, I'm not the man you can say go yeah. away to.
Right.
He's asserting his, I mean, we're talking about power.
Oh, yeah,
you definitely. Can live, you can live or die
yeah.
by my word.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. He definitely defaulted that one. It wasn't going his way.
But my point is it was always there.
Well,
it
yeah.
was always there. In other words, the other part mm-hmm. was just an act. But it was always there.
And it also says that men think with their penises.
No.
And with...
she turned him around real quick. Sorry, Serge.
I just... In this situation, I yeah. disagree. She's just like, he's a Nazi. And he is.
But
no,
you,
no, no,
you,
no.
She
used it for him. Her.
Yeah.
Well, she used it. My point is she never went for it because she knew what the situation was.
I totally agree with that.
No, no, I'd say she never went for it because she was in love with someone else. But I still think he wanted to... I think, well, obviously, he demonstrated his power, but I think he would rather have had them actually connect.
John.
But now look at her. Look at her. She's changing. She saw the look on his face there.
But she's seeing him
in
the film.
Changed, and now she's going to go over and touch him after she actually... Look at this. She feels bad. The music tells us she feels bad.
Speaking
and then
of
what
which,
does she get? Shot.
Well, she gets killed
which
because,
is
he's
brilliant.
A, because he's a Nazi.
Well, also because she shot him.
Well,
I
exactly.
mean, anybody
that,
shoots
that,
you, it doesn't matter who
exactly.
it is.
Tit
you're
for tat
shoot.
Here.
Exactly.
Come on now.
But that's why I love the Quentin Tarantino is that it constantly go back and forth. People are not one dimensional.
No. I mean,
see,
sure.
Look at that. She actually feels bad.
I'll grant you she feels bad.
Yeah.
But
now she's not. I'm not saying she wants to get married to him and have his kids. But as one human being to another,
and there's him with a gun in
the
background.
Wasn't that
a great
very
shot?
Nice.
Still have that.
This song is from a film called Revolver with Oliver Reed.
Oh,
Marconi film
that's
done
right.
in the 70s.
There was no alcohol drink on that
it's
film.
The pop song that was used in that movie.
Oh, my God.
And I love the fact that it takes a while for people to die.
I hate in
films where people die immediately all the time. It's because that's not real.
Yeah.
I mean,
well,
people get shot and they go to the hospital 4 hours later.
Let's go back
and
to the
alive.
Choking scene where he chokes her to death and then she just dies. Like, no.
Yeah, it takes a lot
longer
to
But anyway, but yes, I do agree. Yeah.
Well...
And John, I agree with you, by the way. If I can
cut the music off.
I think totally that she has some sort of emotional connection with the guy. Otherwise, the whole scene doesn't work.
Yeah.
She has to.
Yeah.
But like you said, she doesn't want to run off and have his kids and whatever. Right. But, you know, hey, we can all, you know, find something else attractive, find something very, very, very appealing about him and be like, what if? And at that situation. You don't have to do research.
Well,
it's
just...
Right. And you have a whole history that's...
There's a whole context that's like just this. Missing.
Yeah,
oh, I hear you.
Boom.
That's nice.
And look at this.
And this
it comes
total,
up.
Well, the music...
Boom.
And he barely got there, too. Yeah. I love it.
Yep.
Barely got there.
That's very gory
for
an old movie.
Yeah.
Well, that's Eli Roth, baby.
Well,
there's the Wilhelm. Mm-hmm. For those people that are wondering, that was the Wilhelm.
What is the Wilhelm?
Oh, it's a scream.
The scream he just did.
Yeah.
That was the Wilhelm.
And I love the fact that...
The woman in the back is Julie Dreyfus, by the way, who was in Kill Bill. She got her arm chopped off.
Oh, okay.
She was a translator.
Yes.
And I love the fact that he's emotionally moved, that he actually got, like, that was a good film.
The greatest compliment.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then now, yeah,
that's a great shot, of course.
And there's a light on that
and
guy.
An interesting point about that is there she let her humanity in for a second towards a Nazi. What does
she
get?
She was actually proud.
She gets killed.
Well, did you notice how his girlfriend from behind came over and put her hand on his shoulder and was actually moved that Hitler had said something to him? And she was actually proud of him. She was
I know. See, that everybody's human. I like that.
No, see, I patently disagree.
Well, she didn't have to fake. She didn't have to fawn that. She didn't have to fake that because he couldn't see her.
With her in that situation, she had to because it was life or death for her. Either
I hear that,
either she was with him or she, you know, who knows what happened.
We hear that, but I hear you, and that could be true, or it could be that part of her actually was.
She really realized.
I think it's just. I mean, you have to look in the terms of a cinematic trick to make. Him sympathetic. There's a giant Revenge of the Giant face, which I think is great. It's a great
this
image.
This is quite a set piece.
It's a great
this is
image.
An amazing
Look at that.
Set piece. Mm-hmm. On so many levels of just being
an opera. And it's like, wait a minute. Hitler's been shot. Excuse me? What?
Yeah.
I love how he had the scar face. He growled.
I know.
Now, am I the only guy who thought they'd see split screen like the gym scene in Carrie at this point?
Yeah.
With the revenge thing going on of everyone getting their just desserts. And you just,
I've never thought about that. But
that's what I was thinking
work.
Of when I'm watching this.
Right. And now,
I need Sissy Spacek covered in blood just
right
out.
And now just to make sure, now, of course, they're shooting everyone. And now just to make sure we understood what we saw before, because when I saw it, I'm like, wait a minute. Huh? What just happened?
Well, they didn't know all this was going to be happening. They didn't know that the film was going to go off. They thought they were going to be the ones doing the killing. They thought they were the ones.
Right.
No, I understand. I'm not arguing with that.
Yeah.
But then in terms of what they show, because I'm still processing, Hitler's been shot.
Sure.
Of course, they're showing this big thing burning, and there, of course, he's...
Well,
I mean, this is the revenge fantasy, I mean, essentially fulfilling himself.
Yeah.
He's killing. He's being the hawk.
Yeah.
He's killing the Germans.
Which just goes to show that
and then
people can be
here's
hot.
The face in the smoke.
Right, nice. Which could have been done a little better. Mm-hmm. Right.
There it is.
That's
nice.
That's
classic.
I would love to know the explanation.
And there
you can't
just
that.
So you know, and make sure Hitler's dead.
Yeah.
And she's evaporating into smoke.
And zero, boom.
See, but that is a good question.
Ooh,
why did they still have the dynamite on their legs? Was it a martyr? I mean, were they going to martyr?
Or did they just...
Or did they get wrapped up in the moment
and they forgot?
I don't know, man. You know, if I got dynamite strapped to my leg, there's got to be a really big moment for me to forget that.
To me, this is one of the best looking shots in the movie right here.
You like this one?
I do. I love the trees and stuff.
Well, it's a nice overcast day.
Well, we've also been inside since probably the whole beginning of the film.
Yeah.
Back to nature.
But it's not necessarily this scene right here, but later when they cut to the fire road off to the side and they show him walking down it and the split between the two.
Okay.
It's almost like you could see the line of, you know, because they said they were driving over the border, and that's it.
Oh, okay.
I'm just glad this isn't blue screen.
It's not location.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
That sucked. Yeah, that's great.
Especially
the
bad
great
blue screen. They had bad blue screen in the 60s, you know.
So anyhow, so now we're at the last part, which is the 110, which is, it looks like the bad guy's going to get away. And here, the bad guy getting away would be him being able to be, you know, pose as an American and get away with being an evil Nazi.
I like how Quentin uses Herman's name like three times before they kill him. Why did you kill Herman? You know, it's like, it's awesome. You're like, wait.
That's a nice scope placement right there with the three of them filling out the whole frame.
Yeah, really. Filling it quite up.
About my knife. I think he wanted to keep it as a keepsake, but no, here you go. Yeah. I think I just killed him.
And I love the fact that he waits for him to be cuffed before he shoots the other guy.
And now he's shocked.
Yeah, and he's genuinely.
Are you mad?
Yeah.
Because he cares about life.
But do you understand that it's totally switched?
Sure.
How many times have Jewish people said that to Nazis?
Yeah, and now it's totally.
How many Jewish people said what to?
To Nazis. Okay. What are you doing? You just shot a human being. Yeah. And now it's totally switched.
Well.
The scalpers.
Yeah.
I don't blame you. He's so goodness. And here's your callback, John.
Yeah, that's right.
And this gets back to what the nature of this film is. It's not an action film.
I love his little quiver of the lip there.
It's not an action film, and in that sense, it's not a Dirty Dozen. If it was a Dirty Dozen, this would have ended differently. This is actually, strangely enough, a character piece with action.
Right. I was going to say, absolutely.
I'm just saying what I was expecting when I came in.
Yeah.
It's one of those things.
Yeah.
But I wasn't.
No, I was expecting the same thing, too. I'm just trying to understand the nature of the film. And watching this again, now I can see more clearly this is a character piece.
And I'm always surprised by a film that you think would be a standard action film that turns out to be a character piece. Yeah. I'm like, wow, great.
And here,
it's about people.
Now, here before we saw before their point of view, and now we see it.
Yeah. Oh. I love the hand grabbing the dirt back here.
Oh.
That's tough.
Jeez.
That's really tough.
It's so nasty.
You know, I never saw that grass before.
Yeah. That's nice. And there it is.
And that's about as atrocious as it can get.
Yeah.
What a great ending line, too, of a movie.
Now, if you watch Dark of the Sun, you'd see that the movie ends basically the same way of mutilation of a Nazi.
Really?
Nice.
Yeah. And
now, is this an original music here, Jim, or do you know?
I do not know for sure. I'm not going to go on record to say either way.
I don't know. I don't know. It's... It's good music. I like it.
I don't recognize it from something else, but it doesn't mean it isn't.
Well,
gentlemen.
I enjoyed doing that very much.
And how much did Bob and Harvey have to do with that film? I would say probably very little. Okay,
I don't know.
Here's the money. Get out of our hair.
Mm-hmm. I think they kind of know better at some points. Though, who knows the stories here? I mean, especially with Kill Bill. About why they split it into, which I think ultimately it did work, but I would have liked it as one film.
Yeah, it would have been a long film.
I feel that at a certain point in Quentin Tarantino, he's kind of like.
Oh, there we go. Tom Tiefer did the German translation.
Okay.
So I think maybe he worked with other. I mean, I think probably he worked with other people to make sure that essentially the performances were what they were supposed to be. Going back to your question earlier, you were saying.
No, I was saying, the one thing I do feel, and it's not too bad, but it feels like Quentin Tarantino used to have a lot shorter leash, and now that everybody kind of looks at him as like an end-all, be-all, amazing filmmaker, they kind of gave him that leash that dogs have that has a spool on it, and they can go as far as they want, and they feel like they can bring him back, but they never can bring him back quite enough. That's what I felt like in a lot of scenes in this film where we were talking about the basement scenes and things like that. It's like, just reel it in a little bit more, but they don't want to say anything to him because they feel that, well, he'll know better because he's such a great filmmaker. And, you know, but in a lot of ways, it is perfect because he gets to make the film he wants to make. So so therefore you take the good with the bad.
Right. I really, really enjoyed it. I would have loved to see a little more Aldo and his men. But I really, really enjoyed it. And the big question is, as soon as someone starts reeling a leash, who's
bringing in a, who's reeling the leash.
Exactly.
And they could just reel it in all the wrong ways.
So I would much rather have this than...
And that gets back to the whole thing. My point about the three Italians, and I can say, well, I didn't like this, or this scenes were too long. But in a way, once again, it gets back to what you were saying about art, Tim, and it's that, you know, it's what we make of it. And it's, in this sense, I mean, his real artistry is in his writing, and then afterwards the directing. I mean, but his real artistry is the writing, and then you can keep on finding things and the connections that bring you back. What is American
he
Colonel?
He was the American Colonel. He was actually in the Pride of a Nation. Is that the name of the film? The German film.
And
he was the guy calling
Nation's Pride.
And he gets on the phone really quickly. And you see him just for a split second. You see
that was
Bo Svenson.
Yeah,
just really quick.
Who actually was in Kill Bill also?
Yeah,
beginning of Kill Bill 2.
Right, preacher.
No, absolutely. So, I would rather have a director that's true to his vision and takes it the distance, and the film is released accordingly and not played with by anyone in between.
It was great. I mean, just the characters. When's the last time
I saw
a movie
to him
that had such great characters?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So John still lived up to what you expected of it?
Oh, most definitely.
Yeah, and structure-wise, just at all.
Oh, yeah. Well, what's great is that it was, you know, he was so flexible with it, and he still came back to what he needed to do to tell a story, but he did it in his own way, and very entertaining and spot on.
Right.
So thoroughly enjoyable.
Yep, and I will watch it again and again and again. Like I said before, I just have a little bit. But, hey. I like it. I love it. Yeah. I mean, with a film like this, just because of the directing and the writing alone and the cinematography, I could watch it over and over and over many times.
You could even if you're not agreeing with some of the writing and structure, the craftsmanship
is always there.
The craftsmanship is always there.
I think, personally, it's Quentin Tarantino's best directed film.
I have to say, this now like third time I've watched it, and I mean, there's some things that didn't work, some things that didn't. I find a lot of it highly entertaining. And, of course, the thematic things and the whole thing of the setting and, as I've been discussing, the realities of what it was like during, you know, in Nazi-occupied France. Mm-hmm. I see its divergence. But then it gets back to the whole point of that this is not necessarily a plot-driven film. There's plot, but it is a character-driven film, and it's not action. It's not a Dirty Dozen, which we were all expecting. And as well as I was, and I wish I'd seen more, but now watching it and seeing it, it really is character. It's the character imperatives that drive everything that essentially says, well, for the sake of these characters, Hitler dies. All these guys die. If I can make up my own movie, I make up my own movie. And now I can see how it makes sense. Even up to the end where you pointed out that was the last part. That was page 110. That's where you think the bad guy's going to get away, and he doesn't. Right. And it wasn't an action scene. It was all in character, and it was all very simple and understated. And so that actually gave me a really, really better appreciation for all this. But in terms of directing, I think it was very well directed. I still think Pulp Fiction is his best directing job. But I think here's definitely more mature than Pulp Fiction. Pulp Fiction, I just think, was just a confluence of just lots of things coming together. It's great, raw, youthful energy.
I called it the 110. It's like 110 scene, but really happened at 149.
Oh.
So just because it was longer, but that's what happens right before the end, right?
Okay. Yeah. So that was very interesting. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much. That's it for all of us, and that's it for this film, Grok. See you next time.